Acme is making your grocery shopping easier than ever. Download the Acme mobile app to find digital deals, earn reward points, or shop for delivery or pickup. Acme, fresh foods, local flavors.
93.3 WMMR, audio on demand, presents the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
There were a lot of tributes is the wrong word, but I guess...
Memes?
Yeah, memes.
Floating around?
About the biting with
Luis
the World
Suarez.
Cup. Yeah, Suarez.
Yeah, and Uruguayan star.
Yeah.
Nicknamed the Cannibal.
And he's done this before,
he
right?
has several times. And apparently he's a bit of an a-hole for a number of different reasons. He said some racist things in the past, and I didn't know much about him. Many people consider him to be top five players in the world, but he did this biting incident against the Team Italy the other day.
Did you see the footage of it, Preston?
Yeah.
It's so blatant. Ridiculous. First off, he chomps down on the other player's shoulder, and then he acts as if his own mouth is hurt. Like,
right.
He falls down like, oh, how did I get this injury?
Yeah, he's pretending as if his head came down and hit the guy's shoulder when he's done this before. And, I mean, why are you – wouldn't you – if you were in an American sport, you'd probably be, number one, fined and possibly kicked out of the league for doing something like that.
He might miss – games. I mean, FIFA is looking into it, and it might.
What do you mean looking into it?
Yeah,
I mean,
it's right there.
Yeah.
Can his ass? It's clear what he did. I'm surprised the other player didn't just turn around and punch his face.
Yeah, but how do you just let that go?
But
yeah.
He didn't, and that was the right thing to do because the moment you do that, then you yourself are going to face, expulsion.
You get the red card.
If you saw the other player's shoulder, there are clear teeth marks.
Yeah, and then so he's trying to show the official that, you know, hey, this guy bit me. And then one of the Uruguay teammates tries to pull the shirt up like, no, don't look at that. Nothing happened here.
You ever been bitten? You ever been, like a good bite? I mean not necessarily.
During rough sex?
Well, maybe. I don't know.
But I was going to say by a kid.
To the point where almost drawing blood or actually drawing blood.
It's effing painful.
Got to hurt a lot. I've never been bitten that bad.
There was a time about 10, 12 years ago where I had two friends who, when they would drink, thought it would be funny to bite people. And it was...
stupid.
I had lunch with these girls yesterday.
It was two girls.
Girls.
Wow.
And they would get hammered, and they go around and they'd bite you. And it was
people that they didn't know.
No, people that they knew.
Okay. Were these hickeys?
No.
Or...
Steve, it was like Luis Suarez chomping down on your shoulder, and they thought that it was funny.
That's moronic.
And it was annoying, and it hurt. They would chomp down on you, and I was like, "What the hell is the point of all of this?"
Are they exceptionally good looking?
I don't know, good looking enough, but like it's one of those things where you're like, who cares? It doesn't matter to me
I wonder if they thought they had latitude.
I think they thought they were being silly and funny and cute. And whereas,
I bet you.
I just punched you in the face.
So stupid.
Yeah. Case, you were saying you were a biter when you were a kid.
Yeah, when I was a kid. I mean, when I was in college, I was more of a lover, but when I was a kid...
You go around biting people in college.
But yeah, I was so...
I'm not happy with this grade.
Yeah, so if I wasn't happy or upset about something, I would bite whoever. Never
Casey
never adults.
Bit me.
But my
never
mom...
Never adults, kids? Other kids?
Other kids, you know, like my siblings or whatever. But my mom, she would bite me back, you know? It was like,
bite you back?
You want to bite somebody?
Yeah.
This is what it feels like when you're biting people.
There's something, and there was... You look at... But though, you have this. You have Mike Tyson, of course, the incident is brought up. And you'll in the Bizarre File, every other day, you'll have somebody biting or chewing some part of somebody off.
Off, yes.
It's terrible.
How does that happen?
Friends of mine from college got into a fight. It was a drunken fight. And I guess the fight went to the ground. They were grappling, and the one guy.
Sometimes it's all you have.
Uh-huh.
And you get and you can use it.
Sure.
But there's something very primal about it, Steve.
Yeah.
That if you, all of a sudden, you lose your senses, and you're just animalistic and feral, the biting comes out.
Well, this guy almost bit the other guy's thumb off.
Jeez.
He wouldn't let go. I mean, just biting down, you know, like basically chewed it into a pulpy mess.
Do you know what it, you think of flesh, you know what it takes to chew, like to chew something off? Flesh is pretty resilient.
Yeah.
I believe that your jaw, your muscles are some of the strongest in your body, I think.
Are
That pressure.
Tractor trailers and stuff like that with their
teeth.
They chew tractor trailers.
Yeah. Hang on a second. Let me go to Adam. Hey, Adam, how you doing?
Hey, you guys rock.
Thank you, Adam. What's up, bud?
I've been bit before. I'm a nurse, and it was kind of funny because it was a story I never want to remember again. Was reaching across this woman who was probably about 85, and she locked down on me like Jaws.
Wow. Was she? Did she have dementia or something? Or
yeah, she was confused from something that was going on.
Okay.
And of course, she was like 85. She had a full set of teeth.
What the hell?
Yeah, of course.
And when you're 80, you're not supposed to have your original teeth.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, there are different things you can try to do in that situation that they try to teach us, like force the bite, where you put your arm more into the person's mouth so they unlatch.
Huh.
So, and wait, what's the way to release someone who's clamped down on you, Adam? What do they teach you to do?
So, my forearm was pretty much in her mouth.
Yeah.
Actually, push your forearm further into her mouth because it creates pressure, and then hope they'll release it.
Rather than pull away, which would make it even worse.
Wow. Okay.
If you push into them, maybe it'll cause their mouth to open more.
Exactly.
And then as they open it, you can get it out of there.
Jesus. That would freak me out. Some old woman clamped onto my arm.
How bad were you injured, Adam?
Luckily, it did not break the skin, and I think it was only because she started chomping down a little bit more. And I'm like, this isn't working. What do I do? So nobody's looking. I punched her in the forehead.
Yeah. I mean, you had to.
I would have popped a fire hose in her rectum.
Punch an 80-year-old in the forehead.
Punch an 80-year-old woman.
Yeah, yes, of course.
Not too hard, though.
Yeah.
Not too hard.
No,
kind
listen.
Of like a flick.
She's lived long enough. Take her out.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, she was asleep for the rest of the night. And
asleep, knocked out, same thing. Asleep, in a coma, you know, 6 of 1.
Oh, my gosh.
I bet crazy. Nurses.
Thanks, Adam.
People freaking out, ER doctors and nurses.
Police get bitten all the time, I'll bet. Man.
Preston, I think you're right. It says the thick muscle in the cheek, which is located in the back of the jaw, is responsible for opening and closing your jaw during chewing, and that is the strongest muscle, according to the ability to exert a force on an external object.
Yeah, like pounds per square inch. It's pretty formidable. And if somebody locks down and doesn't want to let go, you're going to have a hard time. You got to punch an old lady in the head.
I would be flicking that old bitch against the wall. The nurse, you know, you're trying to take care of her.
Hang on, let me go to Lionel. Lionel, you're on the line.
Hey, good morning. I work as an expert witness in a lot of alcohol-related litigation.
Yeah.
A lot of it involving DUI, et cetera. But I had a case in lovely Bayonne, New Jersey once where a guy got his nose bitten completely off.
My God. Lionel, and, so did you see the shots of the after effect?
Oh, yeah. When you do the research in the case, you get the pictures and the surgery, and they I found out a lot of, like, something like 20% of emergency room calls involve human bites.
Yeah.
It's a huge number, and they rebuilt this guy's nose. They took, they call it a butterfly. They remove a section of the skin on the forehead and bring it down in a loop to create sort of a nose.
That is messed up. So the nose was bitten completely off?
Yeah, it turned out it was a bouncer. I teach safe alcohol service to bars and establishments. That's why I got started being an expert witness. And it was a bouncer that bit this guy's nose off.
Jesus. I still contend that you have
Lionel.
You can't just do, unless you're a Mako shark, a solid one-bite chomp, you're going to have to tear at it.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to have to move your hair. So it was that Chris Farley, was in Dirty Work, the Saigon
whore
bit my nose off. Dr. Mike's on the line, wants to talk about biting noses off. You want to talk to him real quick?
Absolutely.
Let's get him on the line. Dr. Mike Sirigliano.
Hey, guys. Hey. How are you?
Good, man. How you doing?
Listen, you know, the human bites can be very, very serious. And this guy should be banned for life.
Right.
All that bacteria.
Not only, now think about this. Not only can you get an infection, and this is all beyond unsportsmanlike conduct, but you can transmit HIV. You can really injure somebody. And this is just horrible.
Yeah. You know, we were talking about this, Mike, and it's what in any major sport, in the NFL and in any of our sports, this person would be out. This guy has a history of it, and they're reviewing it. They're considering action. I don't get that.
Well, I don't either. I think that you potentially put someone's life at risk. I mean, you're not just talking about leaving a scar or you need to go and get an antibiotic. But when I have a patient that comes in with human bites, I get real nervous because they can get infected. You can get cellulitis. All of those are treatable. But you can also transmit virus, and that's the thing that bothers me.
Dr. Mike, let me ask you a question. Obviously, in your years as when you were an intern and all that stuff, and I know you have to work the ER and all that. Have you ever been bitten by a patient?
No, I almost got punched by a patient. it is what it is.
Yeah.
I'm pretty fast.
Right. You are the ninja doctor.
I run fast.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah. I almost got stuck with an HIV-positive patient with a needle.
Oh, my God.
That's another story. But
damn, man.
This is just terrible, and everybody needs to know that it's not just a simple little thing. It can be very serious and very dangerous.
All right, and am I correct? Unless you have world-class choppers, if you're biting someone's nose off or someone's ear, you've got to rip and rend and tear, correct?
Well, I've never done it, but the masseter, you know, the jaw is such a strong muscle. It doesn't take much.
Really?
To cause a lot of injury. Well, look at, what was it, Michael Tyson? He sat on an ear once. I mean, the thing is that's a very powerful piece of equipment.
Yeah.
And you can inflict a lot of damage, and you can really maim and injure someone or even kill them.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. Yeah, the disease aspect. What's going on in your mouth? It's like when you get bit by the remember Sharon Stone's husband got bit by that Komodo dragon?
Yeah.
It wasn't the bite itself that was the issue. It was all the bacteria and crap in the thing's mouth.
Well, you think you brush your teeth, and we're loaded with bacteria in your mouth. And when you bite someone, and especially if you break the skin, which is the amazing defensive part of the body, if you cut into that skin, then you expose bacteria and all kinds of things into the body.
Wow. All right, we got a bunch of calls to go through. Thank you, Dr. Mike.
Love you.
Love you, man. We'll talk to you later. All right, let me get to these. I'm sure this has happened to somebody before. Let me go to Aaron. Hey, Aaron, good morning.
Hi, Gadzooks.
Gadzooks. What's up, Aaron?
About 10 years ago, I went to a 21st birthday party for one of my friends, and we went to a strip club. And I guess the stripper liked my boobs and decided to put a nice set of teeth prints around my nipple.
Dude, strippers will bite you.
Yeah.
Really?
They'll bite you. Yeah. Yes, they will.
Mm-hmm.
They think they can get away with it.
And they can, can't they? Clearly,
yes, they can.
And clearly they can.
I've never been bitten, but I have heard of people getting bitten by strippers.
I was at a bachelor party where one of the patrons bit a stripper's
boob. That you can't get.
It was completely and totally by accident. The patron was doing that thing where they put the dollar in their mouth, which is disgusting anyway, and then they put the dollar in between their jugs.
Ruining the wholesome fun of a stripper by putting filthy, dirty money in your mouth.
It just so happened when he was in close proximity to the stripper's body, the dollar fell out, so he went to go bite the dollar.
And what happened?
It ended up on America's Funniest Home Videos.
Oh, he was getting dragged. Well, she punched him in the face like two or three times, and then he was getting dragged out by the bouncers.
He's lucky that's all he got. Mm-hmm. Let me go to Mary Beth. Hi, Mary Beth. Good morning.
Hey, bitches.
Hey, what? What's up, Mary Beth?
Three of my friends, when they get ridiculously drunk, love to go around and bite everybody.
What? What is that?
Why is that?
I don't know why.
Does anybody call them on it?
Yes, you tell them to stop it, but they'll come around a different way and get you when nobody's paying attention. I actually have them do it.
Mary Beth, it says here that blood has been drawn.
Yes, a couple years ago, my one girlfriend, actually my best friend, decided that she was going to bite my thigh and jumped over a couch and latched onto me almost like a terrier and refused to let go, and my boyfriend had to pry her off me.
Mary Beth, I would have punched her teeth out.
Yeah.
I mean, she's clamping down, drawing blood, as you just heard Dr. Mike say.
Yeah.
That can be very serious.
Yeah, I wish I had known that when it happened.
Yeah, it's open season. When biting starts to happen, it's okay. Man or woman, you can punch them.
Absolutely.
80-year-old woman, punch her.
In fact, just if you think she's going to bite you, punch her anyway. Best to be erring on the side of caution. All right. Maybe don't do that.
Damn, Mary Beth, did your friend apologize afterwards, or did she think it was funny?
She did apologize afterwards, but we did have to remind her it happened.
Okay. She was that far gone. Yeah. Sometimes hickeys will get away from people. You've seen that, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
The blood drawn during the overly rambunctious hickey.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Jackie Bam Bam had a...
oh, my God.
A bloody hickey?
It was a serious hickey.
It looked like he had leeches all over his body.
I'm hesitant to share this story.
Nope, do it.
No, now it needs to happen.
Now you have to.
I was with a girl, and she preferred a little biting.
Let's call her Kathy Romana.
She preferred some biting on a very sensitive area on her body.
Okay.
And was asking me to bite harder, and I did not want to because it felt like I was going to bite this part of her body off.
I would agree with you.
And enjoyed it. And I'm like, wow, I didn't feel comfortable doing that at all.
Like, was she like a submissive type?
She was a little freaky.
Wow.
A little freaky diggy, yeah. But it was, I don't feel comfortable doing
it. No. It would be like spam.
It was harder than spam.
Okay.
So like gristle.
Okay. Like gristle.
You know?
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
No, it was these.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought we were going down
no,
to the deli.
No, we weren't down there. It was upstairs.
We were upstairs in the observatory.
Yeah. some people, I guess, enjoy that. Let me go to Brian. Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Hey, what's up, guys? I want to say you're awesome, and thank you for every morning giving us tons of entertainment.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks for listening.
What's your story, bud?
All right. So when I was younger, I had an anger problem. Always got in fights. Never bit anyone until one time. Walking down the hallway, and this guy slams my head into the corner where it's pointy. Literally, blood is gushing down my face. Out of nowhere, I just bite his arm and take off a whole chunk.
So you chewed off a whole chunk of flesh from his arm?
Yep.
Okay, so to where it was left in your mouth?
There was like a piece of skin that I just had to spit out.
All right, so let me ask you, are we talking what one might see on The Walking Dead, that kind of clamped chunk where there's a visible mouth bite, or you're just saying you bit off a layer of skin?
It was more like just a layer of skin, yeah. It wasn't full-on zombie.
Wow. But he had to spit it out. And then what was the end result of that, Brian?
Well, I got in trouble even though my head was bleeding worse than him, his arm was. And then everyone called me the Wolf Man. His mom made him go get a rabies shot. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome way to get a nickname, though, man.
The Wolf Man.
Yeah. How long did that last?
Oh, I've never bit anyone since then, but, I mean, growing up, I still got
Dude, it's better than the mummy.
Yeah.
I love that. All right. Thanks, Brian. I appreciate it. Well, they need it. You know what? They got to kick this guy out.
I think so.
I don't think it's going to happen because I think that other countries are not quite as Uruguay probably isn't as stringent as we are.
It's a country that also supports cannibalism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this guy's a star. That's why they're going to keep him going. I mean, it's good for the sport, quote, in theory, and so FIFA won't ban him.
All right.
This 93.3 WMMR audio on demand program returns after a brief word from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Preston. Grilling season is here, and they have done it again at Omaha Steaks. This is the one and only deal that you can get. It is the Omaha Steaks Grill Ready Collection, a limited time for only $39.99. You heard that right. $39.99 is 80% off. And here's what you get. 2 tender filet mignons, 2 beefy top sirloins, 4 juicy boneless pork chops, 4 boneless chicken breasts, 4 all beef Omaha Steak burgers, 4 traditional kielbasa sausages, 4 award-winning gourmet jumbo franks, an Omaha Steak seasoning packet. And for this deal, you get 4 made-from-scratch caramel apple tartlets for free. Did you hear all of that? You get, it's for $39.99. And what's wonderful about this is you're not going to have to stop off at the store on the way home. It's already going to be there, ready to go. This limited time package for only $39.99 is available when you go to omahasteaks.com, type Gadzooks in the search bar, and add the Grill Ready Collection to your cart. Don't wait. You want to get this offer soon for summertime. Go to omahasteaks.com, type Gadzooks in the search bar, grab your friends, and fire up the grill.
Are you ready for love? If so, Steven makes it easy, handpicking diamonds to create a stunning engagement ring that's guaranteed to take her breath away. Steven Singer Jewelers, real love experts at the other corner of 8th and Walnut, or IHateStevenSinger.com.
Hey, it's Preston. Listen, when I want to relax, I go to Hand and Stone Massage Facial Spa. Listen, whether you want a rejuvenating massage or refreshing facial, Hand and Stone is the place to go. Introductory massages or facials start at just $59.95. Visit handandstone.com or one of their 50 locations in the Delaware Valley. Restrictions apply. See spa for details.
This is the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
So our next guests are in the studio, or actually one of our interns is the reason they're on this morning.
Yeah.
And it's funny because a little while back, he sent me an email asking if they could, maybe come on the show or something like that and send over some music. I didn't listen to it at all. Because
you're a wealthy businessman.
I'm a wealthy businessman. I don't have time for that. No, I knew Casey would. Casey said, hey, you got to listen to this. And he played the song for me. And it was our intern, Jordan. And it was funny because we were listening to it and we didn't know exactly what Jordan did in the band.
Yeah.
So we had a little debate between me and Casey and Chuck sitting here listening to it. And we're like, that guy's got to be the drummer. I said, I think he's the drummer and blah, 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 blah. And we're hearing the music. We're like, no way a voice like that comes out of a dude like this.
Right.
Because we're listening to the voice, and we were actually pointing to the bass player saying, that guy's probably the singer.
Yeah. So I'm there, and as we're watching the video, I turned to Jordan, who was our intern, and said, do you know this guy?
Yeah. And, you know, because we're listening to this great music, and we try, but boy, we were dead wrong about this.
No, it's awesome.
He's the lead singer and guitarist of the band.
Yeah.
And his buddies Shane and Nate make out the rest of Mo Lauda and the Humble. Yay! We're here this morning. How you doing, Jordan?
Good.
Good to see you, man.
Yeah,
too. Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, no problem. So, how did you get the music with into Jackson's hands and get it the artist of the month and all that stuff? How did that happen?
We got an email.
We got an email out of nowhere, but I think it got to Jackson's hand through Ray Koob.
Oh, okay.
Oh, cool.
Shane's dad. Yeah. Emailed Ray Koob. Basically, Ray said, there's not a whole lot I can do for a local, band in their 20s on a classic rock station.
Yeah.
Coop's a great guy, though. Yeah.
You know, to tell you the truth, as far as, original rock bands in this city, there really aren't that many outlets. And you know, thankfully, here at the station, we have somebody like Jackson and his producer, Sarah, who are really entrenched in the local music scene.
And Rabbi.
And Rabbi as well. So we do have an outlet. And there's only so much we can do. So when a band like yours comes along, we're more than happy to do something for you guys.
But even with that outlet, Casey, it is so tough.
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
Like for anybody that's local, I honestly think the music industry might be the toughest one to get into, unless you're trying to be like a superstar in Hollywood or something like that. It's a really tough industry to break into.
Your biggest uphill battle is Preston's very dismissive nature.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah, he's not going to read a damn thing.
You got to understand how things work around here.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nick, and you mentioned like a big star in Hollywood.
Right.
That's tough. However, acting, there are so many gigs out there, mm-hmm. Whether you're going to do like on stage or if you're going to do, commercial acting, industrial.
You can be a working actor somewhere.
But, music.
To be a working musician is a little more difficult. There are fewer jobs that are available out there, paying jobs that are worth it.
The days of the wandering troubadour are over.
Yeah, pretty much so.
It's hard to. I'll sing you a song for some food today.
How long you guys been together, Jordan?
Well, we've known each other for about 5 years, over 5 years, but we've been kind of serious about it for the last two and a half.
Okay.
Yeah, but really a really solid sound as if you've been together for longer.
Yeah, there's a lot of chemistry.
Yeah, and I guess that's obviously something that you really need. Did you, as you've been an intern for the show, did you learn anything from us, or was it just...
No, I did. I loved being here.
Did you?
Man.
Was it cool?
It was more fun. Once you get up.
Yeah. Once you wake up.
That was the tough part because I've never been a morning person. You have to be a really morning person.
And the lifestyle you're seeking is the complete opposite of what we do.
Yeah, that's true.
Hey, Press, by the way, these guys are all from Kathy's alma mater. They all went to Penn State.
That's great.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow. So you guys, did you have any classes in the Kathy Romano wing of the school? Or?
Well, I think they renamed the school after me.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So it's the whole school.
Fuzzbox.
I got you.
What?
Fuzzbox.
Come on. Right. You ruin everything for me.
I know I do.
Let's hear what you guys have to play. What song you want to play for
us? Cool. We're going to play a new one. It's called Throw Me a Bone.
Throw Me a Bone. This is Mo Lauda and the Humble on 93.3 WMMR.
made mouth. Would you believe me or what your pastor dope is talking sweet? Give me 1 week, get to know me, give me plenty of love.
And the Humble, if you're just tuning in, a lot of people requesting. It came in the middle of that song, wondering who is playing on the air. No, it is not Kings of Leon. It is Mo Lauda and the Humble. I'm sure you guys have gotten comparisons to that band before. Am I correct?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah, your voice sounds a lot like Caleb Folliwell. And
you know who else I hear?
The guitar sound as well. People are saying Black Keys.
Black Keys and also Paul Weller, The Jam. You familiar with The Jam and the Style Council? It goes hopping in the Wayback Machine.
Yeah. Jump back there. What is the name of your album that's out?
We have an album called Curse the Weather,
mm-hmm.
Which is pretty fitting for this last winter. Even though I wrote all the songs prior to that, it kind of worked out.
Yeah.
But it's 10 tracks, and you can get it on iTunes, and it's on Spotify and all that.
Is the reaction, in general, solid? Obviously, you caught Jackson's ear and Casey's ear, and that's why you're here today. But you're happy with the progression?
Yeah, it's all about the earth. Fans and family and friends. All of our fans are our friends.
That's cool.
Our last two Philly shows sold out, which is pretty awesome.
Now, nice. And when as summer rolls around, you bands tend to do a lot. Preston, you probably had when you guys were in the band. Summer was a heavy duty time for going and doing gigs. Correct?
Oh yeah.
So are you guys booked all throughout the summer?
Yeah, we're hitting the road for the first time.
Nice, man. So what do you guys hope to do? I mean, you know, here you are, a young group of guys. You got a great sound. You're starting to get some momentum. Is the goal, obviously the goal, I think, for any musician is to
become intern
records and become interns and work for free here on the Preston and Steve Show. I mean, what's a realistic goal for you? What do you think?
Doing this until we can get to a point and look back and be like...
Shouldn't have done that.
we shouldn't have done that,
or I'm glad we did that.
This is how you guys want to pay your mortgage.
Yeah.
This is how you want to live your life, and that's cool. I think the song that I listened to where I was like, oh, wow, maybe we should get these guys in. It's off of the album, and I want to say it is Curse the Weather, right? That's the title track of the album?
Yes, yep.
All right, is that the one that you sent in to Jackson for the local shots?
Yeah, I think that was the one that he featured first on the podcast, and then.
And what? So, for any band out there listening, what is Local Shots? What does that do for you? They showcase you guys?
Yeah, basically they give a bunch of local bands, you know, the kind of spotlight on a major network like WMMR, which is awesome to get that kind of exposure. But they'll feature a band each month, and it'll be on the main MMR page, and then. If you have a video or show dates, whatever you want to get out there.
You can pop all that up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And did that do something for you? Because you guys,
definitely.
You had April. Okay.
Yep.
Awesome. We got to get you more Twitter followers. You got 516. We need that up. We need that up to 1,000.
Just double it.
Yeah, you got to have more. You got to have more than Kill Bill.
Yeah, come on, man. Well, do you want to play another song? I know.
Yeah, we'd love to.
Do you want to do the Curse
we'll
the Weather
play Curse the Weather, yeah.
Yeah, let's first check this out. If you're just tuning in, it's Mo Lauda and the Humble. Our intern, Jordan, former intern. I guess your last day was last week, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Normally, we like to say goodbye to our interns, but I went and told him, I said, listen, you're coming in next week, so we'll say goodbye to you.
This is a
then.
Good goodbye.
This is your farewell. Yeah. This is Curse the Weather, and it's Mo Lauda and the Humble. All right, here we go.
Any day now. Any day now. Any
the Humble on 93.3 WMMR. Our former intern, Jordan, and his buddies Shane and Nate make up the band. You guys have a website where people can get this information, or is Twitter the best way to go about
Twitter, it? Twitter, Facebook. We kind of post everything on the same things. Nice. Instagram, everything's easy, at Mo Lauda, L-O-W-D-A.
What's you the derivation of the name, by the way?
Yeah. We always get this.
Questions about that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it can be kind of a pun, like turn it up Mo Lauda, but he's kind of a figment of my imagination, I guess. There's really no Mo Lauda and there's no Humble.
Okay.
But it's kind of, well, our music has kind of come into the name, whereas we have these big, kind of loud, in-your-face, distorted parts, and then it'll drop out to, you know, more humble.
Yeah, no.
Very nice. It's so kind of
like Hootie and the Blowfish.
Yeah. Exactly. Like that.
Yeah. I'm Hootie.
Why didn't I make that connection?
If that name wasn't taken.
Yeah. All right, so here's what I suggest. Go see them. So in a few years from now, you can say, I saw them when. You know what I'm saying?
Good idea, Case.
I think so.
Or see them in the future and say, I never saw them back then.
I never saw them back then, but I wish I would have.
I wish I didn't heed Casey's advice, and now I'm a hollow shell of a man.
Right? Here you are, standing at the back of the Wells Fargo Center saying, man,
what is this about?
What is this all about?
How'd I get stuck in the future?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And how do I get back?
It's what Casey said so many years ago. God damn it.
But if you go into the future and you see yourself there, you could tell yourself to go back.
Yeah,
and go
point.
See them before, and then you enter
and
into
buy
paradox.
Apple stock.
Right? But, yeah.
You didn't take that advice.
I didn't.
Well, nice work, gentlemen. And I want to pass along the information if you want to submit for local shots. The guidelines are at WMMR.com/music/local in case you're banned and you want to kind of get the ball rolling. There are a lot of people to submit, and unfortunately, not everybody can get it, but every now and then, somebody that, has the right sound and fits in, boom, it can help out a little bit.
They really try, which is an impressive thing, that they really try to go through everything. If you've taken the time to send, they're gonna try to give, a shot to everyone. So, yep. Local shots. Yeah.
And by the way, who was nicest to you here, Jordan, in your time as an intern?
Oh, man.
It'd have to be Marissa.
Well,
right?
Marissa. Who invited your band in?
Who got you the internship?
Hey, who didn't listen to your song?
Yeah.
That's true. Preston's a front one. Front runner.
Now, we hope you had a good time as an intern, and we wish you the best in your music career.
Thank you. Thanks for
having
us.
Same to both of you, all three of you guys. Nice job.
Thank you.
Mo Lauda and the Humble.
Yay!
93.3 WMMR.
The Preston and Steve Show on 93.3 WMMR. Like the podcast, you'll also love it live when you can call in. Weekdays from 6 a.m. to about 10:30 a.m. on the radio at 93.3 WMMR. Or stream the show live via MMR's mobile app.
Hey, I want to speak to people who may be single and been able to find that special someone in their life. And, and you've tried so hard and you've gone out on these dates and you've had relationships that have lasted for a little bit of time and then they fizzled out and then you just can't seem to find...
Not catching the spark.
That perfect person.
Yeah.
I just want to let you know that Charles Manson is marrying a 26-year-old woman.
Oh my! And is she attractive?
She is.
She's attractive.
She is.
Oh, she's good looking.
Unbelievable.
Charles Manson.
He's 80.
80 years old.
And is a mass... He's a killer. Oh my God.
A mass murderer.
Oh my God. Casey, here's a picture of her. Take a look.
She's hot.
For Charles Manson, that's stunning. That's marrying,
For a lot of guys. Model. Who does she look like? She looks a little bit like Soleil Moon Frye.
A little bit.
Yeah, like a little Punky Brewster going on there.
So, sorry that you're still single. Insanely depressing that Charles Manson can find someone else.
Christ, Marissa, you could clean up. We get so much mail from prisons. They're interested in you.
Dude, we could drop you off one week.
Yeah, absolutely. Just work your way from cell block to cell block.
I'll be booed up in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, there are some single people out there who are single because they are too picky. And then I feel bad for the people, like Marissa.
Yeah.
That's not nice.
No, Steve nodded your way. But then there are some people who are not picky at all who just can't find anybody, and I feel bad.
Well, the problem is that society, as a society, we tend to say no. the mass murderer's not a good dating prospect. And that's wrong.
This girl left her Midwestern home and spent the last 9 years trying to help exonerate Charles Manson. Her name is Afton Elaine Burton. The raven-haired bride-to-be, she loves the man convicted in notorious murders of 7 people, including pregnant actress Sharon Tate. No date has been set, but a wedding coordinator has been assigned by the prison to handle the nuptials.
There's a multitude of questions here.
The couple has until early February to get married before they would have to reapply. The Kings County marriage license was issued on November 7th for the 80-year-old Manson and Burton, who lives in Corcoran, which is the site of the prison, and maintains several websites advocating his innocence. She goes by the name Star, and she told the AP that she and Manson will be married next month. And she said, y'all can know that it's true. It's going to happen. I love him. I'm with him. There's all kinds of things.
Yeah, all kinds of things. Yeah, there's all kinds of things. So any word about her parents?
No, I haven't seen anything
about
that.
Okay, they have to be thrilled.
As a life prisoner with no
parole.
You know,
normally I didn't approve, but then I got a chance to talk to Charlie, and he ate some snot, and I said, he's a man for you.
As a life prisoner with no parole date, Manson is not entitled to family visits, which is a euphemism for conjugal visits.
Huh.
So why would she marry him under those conditions? She said she is interested in working on his case, and marrying him would allow her to get information not available to non-relatives.
So he's not eligible for conjugal visits?
Nope.
Good.
There's certain things that the next of kin can do, she said, without elaborating. Sharon Tate's sister Deborah, who acts as a spokeswoman for the families of Manson's victims, said the impending marriage is ludicrous. She said, I think it's insane. What would any young woman in her right mind want with an 80-year-old man? Burton gave an interview a year ago to Rolling Stone magazine in which she said that she and Manson were planning to marry. But Manson was less than certain about tying the knot. He said, that's a bunch of garbage.
Bunch of hooey.
In the interview. That's trash. We're playing that for the public consumption. But asked Monday about those comments, Burton said none of that's true, adding that they are waiting for the prison to complete their paperwork. You know?
Wow.
Yeah, believe it
or
not.
So when they have the service, will they be allowed to be in the same room? I assume they will be, right?
Yeah, they can visit each other.
They just can't get it on.
Yeah, I think that's the case. So,
murder of this nature, are there any other crimes that you're not allowed to get conjugal visits?
I would imagine it would vary from state to state.
But like rape probably is. A convicted rapist probably isn't allowed conjugal visits.
I'm not sure what Pennsylvania, New Jersey, or Delaware laws are. Maybe somebody can enlighten us. But, yeah, and I don't even know. Yeah, who is allowed conjugal visits? Who is not? How long are they? Where do they have them? You know?
It's so effed up. And apparently, reading some of the stories related to this, Preston, in various areas, in prisons like where this prison is, there are single women that'll move into the area specifically to solicit or to try to get the affection of convicted criminals in the prison. Like, that'll be their dating pool.
Do you remember Ted Bundy?
Yes.
And he was representing himself.
Yes.
In court. And there he had found, and he was a lawyer, so he knew what he was doing. There was a woman that he had put on the stand for one reason or another, and she was one of these women that was obsessed with him for God knows why, because the guy was just an insane killer. He was just a brutal killer. And he said a chain of a certain series of words that they were then legally married right then and there by what he said in court.
Huh.
What were you going to say, Nick?
Nobody in federal prison is allowed a conjugal visit.
Okay.
Only in state custody, and like you said, President, it depends on the state.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, I don't know. But there are some women that...
Can this marriage be fulfilling if you don't have a physical thing, you know? I'm worried about these kids.
There's a reality show. I saw a teaser for it not that long
prison?
Ago. Like Prison Wives.
Really?
Yeah. And it follows the women and their men and their, what their life is like on the outside and what their life is like on the inside. And their visits is crazy.
Some
man.
Women dig it because they know where the guy is. They know that if it's any sex happening, it's in the shower.
Wow, man. By the way, all right, so here's more on the marriages, Steve. Prison holds marriages on the first Saturday of each month. And she expects to be married in an inmate visiting room at the prison. And it's confirmed that Manson can have a wedding at the prison and invite an officiant from outside the prison to perform the ceremony.
They having a DJ?
I don't know about a reception.
All right, now we're going to do the electric slide.
Manson and his prospective spouses also would be allowed to invite 10 guests who are not inmates. So they can invite, they can actually have a little.
I'd almost want to get an invite to that thing.
Wow. Yeah. A prison wedding.
Yeah.
You should let them know.
And I bet you they still serve chicken marsala, you know, all the usual.
Salmon.
Salmon. Mm-hmm. The same deal.
Wow, man. I wonder if you could, you know, like send him a message or a letter and say, hey, I'd really like to be a guest. I'm very interested. But you never know, dude. He might invite
you.
Yeah,
man. I'd love to see you. It's going to be a quiet little thing, you know.
Where are they registered?
We're registered at Sears. It's where America shops.
Registered at the commissary.
Yeah. That's the only place.
Oh, we got them cigarettes.
Make purchases.
Yeah.
Toilet paper. You shouldn't have.
How'd you know?
Bed sheets. Awesome.
I have an anonymous caller on the line. Hi, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. What's happening?
So a woman that I work with, her son went to jail a couple years ago for some type of DUI nonsense.
Yeah.
And his cellmate, she started writing letters to him. Now, she never seen him, just started writing letters. She's a very lonely lady.
Yeah.
And now at this point, she's in love with him. She cannot wait for him to get out of jail. But she doesn't even know what he looks like. But just by the letters, she's in love. So he's supposed to get out within the next couple months or so. And she's like, oh, my God, I can't wait for him to get out. He's going to bang my brains out. I'm like, you don't even know what this guy is.
It's so romantic.
Let me ask you, this person that's writing these letters and all that, do they seem like a desperate individual?
Who, the woman or the man?
Yeah, the woman.
The woman.
I don't know, not really. She's so nice. That's why I hired her. But she tells me all these crazy stories and, like, with her son, the reason why he went to jail, and then just that cellmate. I'm like, oh.
So
whatever finds love for you, sure, go for it.
Let me ask you, when is this guy expected to get out of jail?
She said he's supposed to get out of jail at the end of the year.
And what was he in for?
Oh, she has no idea.
She has no idea.
I think that's
the first question you ask a felon
or a convict
when you start dating them. I mean, it's a big icebreaker. So what are you in for?
Yeah,
for murder. Really?
She loves him for who he is and how he writes to her. She's never felt this special. Mind you, she's in the middle of a divorce, too. So maybe she's kind of losing her mind, but...
Oh, wow.
She's in the middle of a divorce.
Interesting. All right, thank you. I mean, you know, listen. I believe that there are some people that can get their life straightened out, but I would let them get out and start to straighten their life out before I start to get involved.
I think, yeah. I think that's probably a good, you know, hey, get on your feet a little bit and then we'll go out to the movies in a couple months.
Right.
So we hear about like convicts checking in on Facebook every few months whenever they get allowed
access
on the computer.
To computers. Yeah.
Does that mean they can online date too? Technically?
I don't know why they wouldn't be able to. I assume when a convict goes online that when they're going online, the same way their mail is checked.
Yeah.
I assume their online history, I'm sure they're blocked from certain sites.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I mean, they're not allowed to peruse porn and stuff.
No, no. And then it has to be monitored because they could be trying to, you know, work some angle for contraband to get in or...
sure.
Yeah, or threats against other people.
You remember with Hannibal Lecter.
Intimidation and stuff like that.
He was just making fun. He accessed the phone and was able to get out. Imagine if you were a convict and had unbridled access to the internet.
Yeah, that might be a tad bit risky, I would think. Let me go to Bryce. Hey, Bryce, how you doing?
Hi. I have a friend who goes to school with my fiance for law enforcement. They went on a school trip to Burke's prison, and she met a guy who's in there for killing someone who molested him. But there's no sign of molestation, nothing. And she's swearing up and down, oh, he's innocent, he's innocent.
Yeah.
And she is completely head over heels for this guy.
Wow. How long is he in for if he's on a murder charge?
He's in for, I believe, 4 more years or so.
Okay.
And you say that the case yielded no evidence that he was, in fact, molested?
Yeah, there's no evidence he was molested, but he's saying he was molested and it was self-defense. But everything points towards he just assaulted and killed the guy.
So she meets him. And how does this relationship start to bloom when you're dealing with a prisoner?
She started writing him letters after the school trip. They got to, like, I guess they said one of the hallways they went through, they had some people there where they could ask questions, like what prison life was like.
Yeah.
And she just started talking to him.
Oh, my God, you like One Direction, too. Oh, my God. That is so bizarre.
And so she is, at this point, committed to waiting out 4 years, and then they're going to live their life together.
Right. And she's trying to, and she's actually going for law enforcement to be a cop.
Oh, man.
So.
Bryce, what is,
oh, my God.
Here's my thinking. The relationship, you know, probably works because he's in prison. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, at this point, once he gets out and the dynamic shifts dramatically.
I see what you're saying.
Right?
Yeah.
Because
you're
in love. Yeah. Now you have we're fighting against the system, and one day you'll be free. And then when he's sitting on the couch with his hand down his pants, you know, then it's going to be an entirely different thing.
Hmm. Man, that's interesting. And what happens if you get in this relationship via letters and so forth, correspondence, and in that course you meet some really great guy, and then all of a sudden you're more interested in this guy than that guy.
Well, your current
you
guy...
end that relationship with the guy in prison. He gets out.
Exactly.
Knows where you live because he's mailing you letters.
Listen, there's something I have to tell you. My ex is in prison for multiple homicides and he's getting out in 5 months.
Right.
So where are we going for dinner?
All right. Thanks, Bryce. Appreciate it.
Yep.
All right. I have an inmate, a former inmate.
Yeah.
Who has an interesting story. Now, don't have his name. Hi, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey, do we know your name, or do you want to remain anonymous?
No, I want to stay anonymous.
Okay, what's up, man?
I ended up writing my cellmate's one friend, and we ended up, you know, developing a relationship, and when I got out, we got married, had 4 kids, and then about 9 years after I got married, she ended up stabbing me.
She ended up. You're the convict, and she ends up stabbing you.
Yep. You want to talk about role reversals?
Yeah. So what were you convicted of, by the way?
It was a lot of stuff. I was young and in a motorcycle club, and you know, I was 13, so it got kind of rough, you know. And I had to grow up rough, but you know, I got a great job now, you know. Good kids and, you know, decent life. You all make mistakes, but
absolutely
kind of weird you're talking about this.
What did you do to provoke your wife to stab you?
I told her I was leaving because I found out she was cheating on me.
Oh, okay. Well, that's just bad cricket. Yeah, you really should not stab someone if you're the cheater.
How bad were you hurt in the stabbing?
She stabbed me right in the hand because I reached for the doorknob.
Okay.
Oh, so you're trying to leave. You're trying to leave.
Out the door to avoid a confrontation. Because I was still on parole, still trying to, you know, do the right thing. It was pretty bad.
I guess you didn't call the cops on her.
I did, but nobody believes that a 5'10", 250-pound big guy with tattoos is getting, you know, beat up by a 5-foot-tall, 120-pound dripping wet woman.
You know what? No, it's funny. And as Preston said, it's absolutely the case where people go, they do their time, they hear the call, they turn their lives around, and that's what you're saying you did that.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you were in prison, did you see this phenomenon of women seeking relationships?
A lot. Yeah. You get, in fact, there's websites that women can hook up with inmates. There's actually inmates are allowed to use computers in certain parts of prison, certain like levels of custody in prison. They can run their Facebook or whatever they want off their computers. What is inmate dating sites? It's like a lot of inmates get put on almost celebrity status by the crap they do. Also, like, there's a hierarchy of levels, like the murderers, the armed robbers, the bad guys per se, the tough guys, they have much like a much higher celebrity status with the women than any like a pedophile.
Those dudes actually have like groupies, like inmate groupies.
You're not kidding. You're not kidding. In fact, I knew a guy in the one cell block who was in there for murder ended up having a relationship with a guard behind. Cell doors.
Well, I've seen stories like that. That apparently happens fairly often.
It happens very often.
That's effed up.
I actually had a relationship with a nurse when I was in there. So yeah,
you got someone. You were in prison.
Absolutely.
Man.
Yeah, a lot of weird stuff happens in there. I mean,
well, thanks for sharing the story, man. We're glad you got your life turned around.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, guys.
Take care, man. We'll see you. Wow.
Wow. That's just a mind blower.
By the way, Nick pulled up the website, and I knew these existed. I've just never... ever thought about looking at one.
Because you have, you're happily married. You have no interest in inmates.
Meet an inmate. It's meet-an-inmate.com. And just for the hell of it, I clicked on female prisoners, and I did ages 18 to 23, and it's a whole, there's a slew of really attractive young ladies on this site. And I just pulled up one randomly. This girl, Vanessa, 22 years old. She's in prison in Texas. And it, you know, her letter says, as you read this, I can only hope and pray it would have found you in the very best of all aspects of life and blah, blah, blah.
Oh,
blah,
I'm sure
blah.
She wrote that.
All right. So anyhow, it doesn't say what she is convicted of, but it does say earliest release date 2023, maximum release date 2033. So I was just reading in the paper this morning about a murder conviction of somebody who's going to get 7.5 to 15 years. So this, if her earliest date... A release date is 2023. She probably killed somebody.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But she's kind of cute.
But she's she's really cute.
Yeah.
Wow, man. Let me go to Sam. Hi, Sam. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Gadzooks.
Gadzooks. What's up, Sam?
So my friend actually worked at CFCS on State Road in Philadelphia. She was a nurse in the, you know, in the hospital there, and she had an inmate who would come down often, and sure enough, they fell in love. They had a relationship going, and she got caught, and they fired her from the prison.
Oh, yeah.
So let me ask you, Sam, what the details about this guy. Do you know much about, like, what he was convicted for or how long?
He's in there for murder.
And how long was he?
I think he's doing life.
Life?
And you said she still goes up and visits him?
She still goes up and visits him.
So she loses her job. And also, if you're working in the hospital of the prison, you have access, obviously.
Great money.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's making great money, beautiful house, and she kind of just threw it all away for him, and he's never coming out.
Sam, would they have sex at the prison in the infirmary, or?
She got into some detail, never, you know, intercourse, but, you know, some.
So, okay, yeah, so right. Peripheral stuff, finger stuff.
Exactly.
Sam, what does her family say about this?
They hate it.
Yeah, yeah.
They even, like, cut her off.
Yeah.
So it's basically just him and her.
But you know what happens? It sets up that dynamic. We'll take on the world. You know, the system is keeping us down, but our love will stand the test of time. I wonder how long that'll last. How long since she was fired from the job, Sam?
It's been at least a year.
Okay. Give it a couple more years, you know, and we'll see where it stands. Because, and if he committed murder, he can't have conjugal visits. So
no, but, nothing.
Wow. All right. Thanks, Sam.
Even the visits are like behind glass.
Yeah.
No touching or anything. So.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Steve, you know how we make fun of reality, like a Bachelor and Bachelorette for these fantasy worlds and these dating worlds that could never actually exist, and you're going off on a hot air balloon above Paris,
sure.
You know, and you fall in love with that show, and therefore you think you might be in a relationship with this person that's going to last. These prison relationships are almost the opposite of that, but there's this control involved, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to the prison, you know where the person is at all times, you have very few variables that enter your quote unquote relationship,
and that's romance. Comforting for for some women. That's I know where he is. He's like, where were you? Oh, that's right, solitary confinement.
Right, and that's got to be appealing for some people, especially if they have no control in other aspects of their lives.
Yeah,
I wonder if in security, so it might make you feel better about your own life too.
Sure,
you know, well, at least it's not as bad.
And if
as
you're
him.
Coming from a place of total loneliness, and then you have somebody where you can at least reach out and connect with them.
My man toes the line because he has a warden.
I have a last caller we're going to go to, an anonymous caller. You're on the air. Good morning.
My younger brother did 10.5 years in prison for armed robbery.
Yep.
You know, he had like a slew of outside relationships with females that had, I guess, knew him prior to him going to prison and met him through other inmates as well. But he also had relationships with women that worked at the prison. One of them ended up getting fired, you know, because of their relationship.
Was her name Sam? Or no, her friend was... Yeah. Was she have a friend named Sam?
No.
Okay.
No, not that I'm aware of.
All right.
But, you know, he stayed pretty financially secure throughout his entire sentence due to all the women that he dealt with. Especially the ones that he dealt with on the inside.
So let me ask you, how many women working within the jails or the jail that he was in, your brother, did he have relationships with?
I guess, from what I gathered, at least a heads up.
So, about six women working in the prison got together with your brother. And are we talking full menu item? Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Full out everything.
Is he a good-looking guy?
Yeah, he's a really good-looking guy.
Well, okay. There you go.
And he was he a player out before he went to prison?
I mean, not so much. He was definitely a ladies' man, but, you know, he's a one-woman type of guy. Wow. Along his prison time, I mean, you know, you don't have much to do in there, so staying fit was on the top of his priority list.
So he's in good shape. Does he like tinier women who can produce radio shows?
What's that now?
Nothing.
Nothing. Don't worry about it. All right. Well, thanks for sharing the story, man. We appreciate it. That's out there.
Man, oh, man.
There are people out there.
It's like it's spring break with guard towers.
Man, unbelievable.
You know, everybody's different strokes for different folks. Yeah,
that's what we learned from Willis.
That's right. What you talking about?
So anyhow.
Hey, podcasters. It's Kathy Romano, and I'm here to tell you that it is finally your chance to win a spot to come to Kathy's Bitch Box Party. That's right. Our next Preston and Steve sorority party, which will be held on Thursday, August 23rd from 6 to 8 at Harris, Philadelphia, will be featuring the release of Kathy's Bitch Box Part 2. It's a 21 and older event. Winners and guests will each receive Kathy's Bitch Box, which is filled with some of my favorite products. Your first drink is free, plus a happy hour buffet. So I have personally handpicked these items that will go inside of the box, and I'd like to thank all of the contributors: Hey Honey, LC Boutique in Warrington, Original Drinking Buddies, True Beauty Concepts, Braided Charm, Yummy Bites, Marinella Jewelry, Bondi Band, Sets Beauty, Wind and Wave Soap, Wine Knots, Priori Skincare, Crest Toothpaste, and Jade Yoga. Thank you everyone who contributed to make this amazing Bitch Box. So here's what you have to do for your chance to win tickets to the event. Email your name, age, and phone number to podcast@WMMR.com. Again, that's name, age, phone number to podcast@WMMR.com for your chance to win. Thanks for podcasting. Good luck, and I hope to see you on Thursday, August 23rd from 6 to 8 at Harris, Philadelphia for the Preston and Steve Sorority Party, Kathy's Bitch Box event.
Excited to have our next guest in the studio. A lot of people have been showing interest of the fact that she was here. And can I come in?
Yes. It's a good sign.
Yeah, absolutely. And she's here to promote a film, among other things, but primatologist, anthropologist, UN Messenger of Peace. Please welcome Jane Goodall to our studio. Morning, Jane. Welcome to Philadelphia.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming in this morning. I mentioned a few titles, primatologist, anthropologist. Actually, there were a whole lot of titles on your Wikipedia page.
A lot has to be left out.
I could have put a bunch of them on there, but I just went with those two. And you're also involved. Now, your relationship with Disney, how long has that been going on?
It's been going on, actually, ever since Animal Kingdom opened, which was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But this particular, you know, ambassador for Disney Nature, that was quite a recent, the last year chimpanzee film came out.
It was great.
They wanted me to promote it, and it was very successful because our network of young people in Roots and Toots is right across the country. And so they asked if I would be an ambassador for the Bear movie as well.
So you were brought into the film, the chimpanzee movie, after it was completed. I love that movie.
Yeah, it was a great movie. It wasn't our chimps. It was chimps in Sierra Leone. Yeah.
Right. And
Ivory Coast.
It's one thing Disney does, and they did in that movie, and it's what I know from, I mean, I loved I've always loved your specials and your, you know, going back for years, but just captures those moments that you just, you know, we don't get to live in that world and to see that stuff. And the Disney cameras capture it in a way that's just breathtaking.
Well, so, it's, you know, they have time.
They have the time.
That's so good because the money's there to spend the time and to get really good wildlife, to get stories, which Disney requires, you have to spend time. And these guys have patience and brilliant photography and they love animals and nature.
You mentioned patience, and that's one of the things about people who observe wildlife and get out there and try and get this wonderful footage. You have to have tremendous patience to be able to capture these images.
You really do. You just have to wait, rain, sun, And, you know, it can be cold, it can be hot, you can be being bitten, yeah. but you just have to stay out there.
But then when they finally get it,
oh, it's amazing.
It must be very
well, this Bears, it's an amazing movie. It's maybe even better than Chimpanzee, I think.
I have. You went to Halo Bay, was it? Alaska.
Yes.
My wife and I took a trip to Alaska, and it was one of those things that people were very dismissive of. It's that. Amazing. Astonishing. I said, we were there, Jane, on the first day when we walked, we were on a cruise. There were whales were breaching, the bald eagles were flying, the yeah. Kodiak bears. And the thing is, this is where they live. Mm-hmm. And it's there's just no terrain like it in the world. Just breathtaking.
And it's completely wild.
Yeah.
And these brown bears in the movie, you know, they've never been hunted. They've never been exposed to human food, so they don't come raiding the camp. They're very, very careful. And to be able to go so close, I mean, almost as close as I am to you,
right.
to a male brown bear who's huge, is a marvelous experience.
Do you know the thing that as I would watch the passing scenery, we're out there and we'd go on these things, and you want to be very respectful of the animals, but you just know you're looking at an area and, wow, that's beautiful, and they look amazing, but you know that if you were to... They'd kill you. They would kill you, and the terrain would kill you.
Yeah. No, they wouldn't. Bears, we're all on foot. There's no cars. And the bears just ignore everyone because they have never, ever been harmed. And they've never, ever, you know, had to be chased away from food because food has never been let out.
Is that right?
And almost all of the bear attacks that we hear about are bears who are living in an area where humans have pushed in. And it's actually where the bears used to live. Now they've lost a lot of their habitat, a lot of their food. So obviously, being omnivores, they go into raid garbage and stuff. So if people didn't let them, they wouldn't have these.
Wouldn't
incidents.
Have that issue.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
When I watch nature movies, and lately the nature movies have gotten so much better. You know, just the camera technology has gotten better. The way to disguise the cameras has gotten better. But when I see and I recall watching something on polar bears, and when I see the demise about to happen, I want the humans to step in and save the life of the bear.
The film crew?
The film crew,
who's
yeah.
there.
Whoever's okay. there. And I understand that's something I guess we can't do, but, you know, how do you feel about that?
Well, when it comes to the polar bear, I don't know what you could do. I think polar bears are much more dangerous, mm-hmm. From what I gather. They do hunt large mammals, which brown bears really don't. They hunt salmon mostly. There's not much you can do. I mean, the polar bears are in trouble because of climate change and ice melting. So what are you going to do?
Right. Well, I'm like, hey, just throw it at deer.
Well, I know what you're saying, Casey. I mean, like, Jane, in your own research with chimpanzees, when you found out that they indeed did not subside only on vegetation, that they were killing other animals and so forth. I mean, was there... You just have to let nature be nature, and they do what they do, as opposed to I want to save that poor animal. This is what this is the way. This is the order of things.
Well, unfortunately, that's true. But you know, we have disrupted the order of things so many times. So if our chimps and Gombe get sick, we try to help them because you know they're decreasing all across Africa. Gombe itself is a little island of forest, and although our program is bringing the trees back and has got the local people as partners, even so, the interference is huge, and humans going to chimp territory take their diseases with them.
Jane, when you first started doing what you were doing, you worked with Louis Leakey, the famous anthropologist, and he sort of brought you under his wing. And was he going out on a limb when the suggestion first came to employ the methodology that you're known for, which is to kind of be by yourself out there? Was that a revolution to anthropology at that time and the study of the primates?
Well, it was a revolution to ethology, which is the study of behavior.
Okay.
And it wasn't Lewis's method, because there wasn't a method.
There wasn't a method
at that time. So it was mine.
Okay.
It was what I'd done all my childhood, just trying to sit near a bird on her nest and be very quiet. And what people objected to was that I gave the chimpanzees names as I got to know them and told me that I couldn't talk about personality, mind, or feeling because those were unique to us. But the bears, have their personalities, minds, and emotions. Of course, you know, they're mammals like us.
It allows us to connect to them. I think in a way, whether it's whatever they feel about it, it's the way we interact. We name animals. It's what we do. And in that way, I remember that there was an Animal Planet special. That there was one chimpanzee you were following who had lost her baby, and she left the community that she was in, and it was the most harrowing, gut-wrenching thing I'd ever seen. But because it's framed that way, it's just our nature. I was much more equipped to connect with that. So it does work with that that whole thing. In this film, we've seen documentaries on bears before. What will we see with this that we haven't seen?
Well, I think it's the intimate nature, and it's following this mother with her two cubs for the whole year. And, you know, she's a particularly marvelous mother, seeing her fight off a male who wants to prey on the babies and a wolf who has the same aim in mind. Seeing the difference in the personality of the two cubs, you know, there's the little guy who's out there being adventurous, and then there's the little girl who's mummy's girl.
Right.
And they're just so different, and she protects them so, so very well.
I wanted to ask you so many things, but you have had involvement with two of the loves in my life, Dave Matthews and The Far Side. You were in a Far Side, your name was in a Far Side cartoon, and then you got to go with bird watching with Dave Matthews. Can you talk about those experiences?
Well, the Far Side cartoon, when it first came out, you know, the famous one of the two chimpanzees grooming, and the female holds up her hair and says, being doing some more research with that Jane Goodall tramp.
They called you a tramp.
Some people objected. They even wrote to Gary Larson. I thought it was an absolute hoot. If you make it into a Gary Larson cartoon, yeah, you've made it.
Yeah. It's true.
It's great.
So Dave Matthews, I met him for the first time at Al Gore's,
Live Earth.
Mm-hmm. And it was at the big stadium. So it was nerve-wracking for me, you know, 65,000 people. And I had 3 minutes only. It's very hard to give a message in 3 minutes. So I was really nervous. And Dave Matthews was following me with his band. And so after my bit, you know, there was an interval, and I went up and said hello and took photos with the band. And then he went out, and he put in his blog, it was the best and the worst day of my life. Best day because I met Jane Goodall finally. Worst because I went out there and broke a string.
And you guys have been friends since then?
We've been friends since then. I mean, he is a very special person, and he really cares about the environment. In fact, he's just going to sign on to a letter in saying that he very, very firmly believes that there should be a ban on ivory in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are some people opposing that ban because they're making money out of ivory. And the elephants are disappearing. I mean, one elephant every 15 minutes across Africa.
Jeez.
Is what it says. They go there. Some of them are almost extinct.
So a crowd, that crowd you're talking about being nervous and being in front of the crowd, you spent a lot of your life in isolation. You said as a little girl you would watch and you'd be by yourself. Was it something that always came naturally to you? Did you have to, for example, I don't care how good you are, if you're out, you know, working with the chimpanzees you did, do you ever go a little stir crazy?
No, I don't think so.
No.
I've always loved being alone.
Okay.
But also, I'm good at being with people.
Yeah.
And the only reason I'm not in Gombe anymore, because for me it was like a paradise. It was my dream of tackling things that seem impossible, and they won't give up and they succeed. Like the last book I did, Hope for Animals and Their World. Every single chapter is about a species that would no longer be on the planet, but for a group of people who said, nope, we won't let it happen. It's very inspiring.
Very much so.
But at 80, you're happy. You're vibrant. You feel great.
Well, I would rather really not be going through airports and hotels. It's the only way I have to get from A to B.
That's like a rock star. Yeah. Could I ask just one quick last question? How do people get involved in your organization? How could people follow you more closely or get active in what you do?
I hope it's an easy-to-follow website. It's janegoodall.org. Hmm. And then the Roots and Shoots is rootsandshoots.org. That's the youth program of the JGI.
Okay.
So it's all there. And we welcome everybody. We need everybody involved.
Beautiful. Yeah. Excellent. Glorious.
Well, thank you so much, Jane. Continue the great work, and we appreciate you spending some time with us this morning.
It's been fun.
The film is called Bears. It's Disney Nature's Bears, and this is Jane Goodall. Thank you very much.
What's new?
Glad you asked.
Dorothy. Take me down to the bottom. Fozzy. Stone Temple Pilots.
New music. More of everything that rocks.
On 93.3 WMMR.
Now, Bizarre. WMMR presents Bizarre. Kristen and Steve's Bizarre File.
The Bizarre File, brought to you by French Creek Outfitters in Phoenixville. Attention outdoorsmen, French Creek Outfitters in Phoenixville, PA is celebrating their 25th anniversary with a store-wide sale. August 9th through the 19th, FrenchCreekOutfitters.com for info.
Let's begin with a pet owner who saved his drowning tortoise's life after giving it the kid's life for an hour.
Wow!
John Fletcher found 45-year-old Frida at the bottom of his garden pond, limp and looking dead.
I want to tell you, I've been totally fine for 50 minutes.
Mr. Fletcher started performing CPR and gave the animal mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. The big lady tortoise, Frida, lives with her lives with his owner in the backyard and has reign of all of it. The amateur astronomer has built an observatory in his backyard in Gloucester and often spends hours gazing at the stars. Mr. Fletcher from the UK says it must have been in there for at least an hour. I took it out and it was looking quite dead and limp.
Most guys would have given up mouth-to-mouth with their turtles after 40 minutes.
I decided to put my own mouth around the head and give a few short blows, having stretched its head out a little. A small half teaspoon of water came out of its mouth, which I had opened. He pushed on with bringing Frida back to life and performed life-saving treatment for another hour. He said, I detected some movement, so I warmed it up with a hair dryer. Massaged its legs and neck. After another full hour, it started gasping and opened its eyes.
I'm sorry, but you put your mouth around the head of a turtle, it's looking too phallic.
And he said, I'm not an expert, but I think that the water was cold enough to make the tortoise shut down so she didn't breathe so fast. And he was able to save it after an hour of doing CPR and mouth-to-mouth.
Are they technically married at this point?
Maybe they are. They should be. Incensed that he would have to share Taco Bell tacos with his brother, who brought the takeout food home, an Alabama man grabbed a baseball bat and struck his sibling in the head with it.
But he brought them home for him.
The victim said that he went last night to Taco Bell near his residence in Athens. A man said that he brought my brother back some food and the food for myself. I had a soft drink and he had water. But when Tyler Terrell Dukes, the victim's 19-year-old brother, realized that he would have to share the tacos, he became irate.
Tacos are very good.
They are. Dukes was also angry about not getting a soft drink himself.
No soft drink?
Dukes produced a baseball bat and struck his brother in the back of the head. When officers arrived at the duo's residence, they discovered the victim bleeding from the head. He was subsequently transported by ambulance to a local hospital for treatment.
It's always a risky thing to hit someone in the head with a baseball bat.
When asked about the location of the bat, Dukes retrieved it from the building and handed it over to police. Dukes was charged with second-degree assault, a felony carrying a maximum of 10 years in prison.
Why are you giving me crap? My neighbor's next door making out with a turtle.
Let's see. How much can you eat of what you love? A man named Gideon Ojai is once again the kale-eating champion.
Now, I love kale now. I used to hate it.
He consumed 22.5 16-ounce bowls of raw kale in 8 minutes on Sunday.
Nah, I couldn't do that.
Competitors chowed down on kale as part of the Kale Yeah competition.
Kale Yeah!
At the Erie County Fair in New York.
Oh, my God.
Ojai also took the inaugural kale-eating title last year, consuming 25.5 servings.
You know, there are two types of kale, at least to my reckoning. There's a very shrapnel-y kind of kale, and then there's a softer, smaller type of kale, and that's what I eat in salads. I love it.
There's the real curly one you're talking about. Is the other type? I know what you're talking about.
Shrapnel kale. I'm not a big fan.
Well, this guy's the champion
kale,
of all.
Kale, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Officers were involved in a decidedly slow speed early morning pursuit in New Orleans when they chased down a man attempting to steal a steamroller. 33-year-old...
You can't call that a high-speed chase, right?
33-year-old Travis Campbell was spotted driving a Cat vibratory compactor, commonly referred to as a steamroller, out of a construction site. Responding officers were able to catch up to Campbell as he drove the steamroller, which has a top speed of 8 miles per hour.
Man, I wish we could get a steamroller here.
Campbell told police that he worked with a construction company that owned the steamroller and was on the way to refuel it. When the officers contacted the company, the owner reported that Campbell had not worked for him in several years and had failed to return the steamroller's keys when he was fired.
Maybe it's like a Philly share thing?
Yeah. Maybe. A steamroller share?
Yeah, steamroller share.
Campbell refused to say where he was headed with the steamroller. He was arrested and booked for theft. And there you go. That's what I have for you in the bizarre file this morning.
This 93.3 WMMR audio on demand program returns after a brief word from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Preston. Grilling season is here, and they have done it again at Omaha Steaks. This is the one and only deal that you can get. It is the Omaha Steaks Grill Ready Collection, a limited time for only $39.99. You heard that right. $39.99 is 80% off, and here's what you get. Two tender filet mignons, two beefy top sirloins, four juicy boneless pork chops, four boneless chicken breasts, four all-beef Omaha Steak burgers, four traditional kielbasa sausages, four award-winning gourmet jumbo franks, an Omaha Steak seasoning packet, and for this deal, you get four made-from-scratch caramel apple tartlets for free. Did you hear all of that? You get, it's for $39.99. And what's wonderful about this is you're not going to have to stop off at the store on the way home. It's already going to be there ready to go. This limited time package for only $39.99 is available when you go to omahasteaks.com, type Gadzooks in the search bar, and add the Grill Ready Collection to your cart. Don't wait. You want to get this offer soon for summertime. Go to omahasteaks.com, type Gadzooks in the search bar, grab your friends, and fire up the grill.
Are you ready for love? If so, Stephen makes it easy, handpicking diamonds to create a stunning engagement ring that's guaranteed to take her breath away. Stephen Singer Jewelers, real love experts at the other corner of 8th and Walnut, or IHateStephenSinger.com.
Hey, it's Preston. Listen, when I want to relax, I go to Hand & Stone Massage Facial Spa. Listen, whether you want a rejuvenating massage or refreshing facial, Hand & Stone is the place to go. Introductory massages or facials start at just $59.95. Visit handandstone.com or one of their 50 locations in the Delaware Valley. Restrictions apply. See spa for details.
This is the Preston & Steve Show podcast.
Our next guest is a star of stage and screen, and he is currently on his Force Majeure tour. Far, I believe, 25 countries, 5 continents, 32 U.S. cities, more dates to be announced. Please welcome Eddie Izzard to the show.
Thank you. This is something I can ask you guys. I'm claiming the most extensive, not the largest, because everyone does dollars, you know, biggest grossing. Right. And I'm not trying to do that. I'm just trying to do the most extensive, i.e. the most number of countries, cities played. And I'm trying to compare with, and I think, I'm claiming this for comedy, just straight out. I just claim things and then see if people, like I claim to be the first person to play Hollywood Bowl on my own. Mm-hmm. And then...
And I saw that listed. Yeah. And so it worked.
They checked it out. Yeah, they said, actually, you are the first person. Because I just noticed that no one had done it, so I went and grabbed that. And I'm saying the most extensive comedy tour ever. No one I don't think is doing that. But I don't know about rock and roll, because I can't find figures. And you guys and your audience, they might know someone who's done the most number of countries in
rock or in comedy?
In rock. So I'm looking for anything. I'm just overreaching here.
All right. We'll see if someone can access that.
Because I mean in one tour as opposed to over the history of their life kind of thing. You know, because I've got Kathmandu is on my tour list as well.
Wow.
I met a man from Kathmandu and I was walking down the road, and it sounds like a Kipling poem, but I was walking down the street in New York, and this guy says, I think I know you. You do comedy. I said, yeah, I'm Eddie Izzard. And he said, I said, what do you do? He says, I'm a student. I'm from Kathmandu. And I said, you're from Kathmandu? It just sounds like I'm from Timbuktu, and he had pretty good English. And I said, do they speak English in Kathmandu? You know, and he said, yeah, I think, and you know, a number of the students do. And I could I do a gig there? And he said, yeah. So I said, okay, I'll do a gig in Kathmandu. So that's been the deal. And I've been trying to get to Kathmandu to do this gig since then.
It's your comedic in your comedic bucket list, so to speak.
It's in my long-term bucket list, but it's a right now bucket list.
Right.
I've got to.
But it's not daunting. You have a good command of language. You are fluent in French and
pretty fluent in French, pretty fluent in German. I'm about 40% fluent in German, 70% fluent in French. I've just started Spanish. So
how's the Russian? I know you got with something
after Spanish. So I've got to get Spanish and then pop down South America because that all opens up, and then goes Russian, then goes Arabic.
In levels of difficulty.
Yeah.
Okay, because we always have the Russian we hear is incredibly hard. I think you've made the point that it's not hard for children who learn Russian.
Well, all Russian kids speak Russian. Yeah, yeah. All Mandarin Chinese kids speak Mandarin Chinese. You've never heard of anyone going to a country and saying, these kids, they couldn't master our language. It's just too tough. So they just point at things and do thumbs up or thumbs down. You've never heard that in any country.
No, you don't.
Therefore, it's not rocket science, because rocket science is you have to invent things that weren't there before. The stuff is already there for the language. You just have to practice it a lot. So maybe some of them needs more practice. Mandarin Chinese maybe needs actual writing skills is harder. So I don't have to write; I just have to do stand-up.
All right. So, what do you recommend in order to practice? Because I want to get a Rosetta Stone or something on CD
to learn it. Well, deep immersion is the key. If you can get a gig, if you can set up some sort of work for you to do 3 months, 6 months is great. A year, you'll get it in the country. Then you get the language. Spanish, I would put up there. I've done French and I'm now learning Spanish. I do think Spanish is a pretty good one to grab hold of. German is slightly harder than Spanish and French.
But being getting a practical use, because I know of people who purchase, and Rosetta Stone can be very expensive.
No, yeah, I like Rosetta Stone.
Unless you can employ it in a practical conversational basis on a fairly daily basis for a while, it's going
to
go away.
Yes, that's the thing. You've got to, if you don't use it, you lose it. Yeah, it's one of those things. Yeah. And so I'm going to keep going back and touring, because I'm now playing Berlin. I played Berlin for 2 months, and so that was 2 months seems to be my best way of going.
Your best way to learn, yeah.
What's helpful is children's programming. Actually, like if you watch Sesame Street in France, you'll learn it, and it's an interesting way to look at it. But you learn it from the ground up, you know, or watching news broadcasts because they speak clearly and eloquently. And
exactly so. News broadcasts are the best ones to go in and are very clear. Or Sesame Street, or kids' books. Tintin is great. There's a French one called Lucky Luke, which is an American cowboy, but he's French, and it's not known in America, but he's great. It's one I learned when I was a kid.
I was reading an interview with you, and you talked about that when you go to France to perform in Germany, that you're able to do it, and people were wondering how you're able to find sort of the little things that would make a French audience laugh or a German audience, and you try to be more universal in the subjects you pick. Is that a difficult process to find the commonality, or is it?
No, you just got to, you have to do in-head editing. I don't actually come up with material that's not going to work in around the world. But it's not that complicated. It's the references. If your punchline is Hershey's bars, say, they're only known in America. They're not around the world, whereas Kit Kat is known around the world. So if you said, so I hit him with a Kit Kat, then that's going to, those people know what a Kit Kat is.
See, I wouldn't know that. I'd feel miserably.
You've just got to travel around a bit and work out what's happening. But I talk about dinosaurs and human sacrifice and squirrels with guns and you go to Moscow. I've played Moscow in English, and in Moscow in English they go, oh yeah, squirrels with guns, yeah, dinosaurs, okay, that's good. God, what does he do? Does he play banjo? And so they can get all this stuff. Yeah. And also there's no French sense of humor, there's no British sense of humor, there's no American sense of humor by my definition. I think there's a mainstream sense of humor in every country and a more alternative sense of humor in every country. And this is, music bears this out. There is mainstream music, and if you're a mainstream musician, you can play to mainstream audiences around the world. Alternative musicians, they play to the alternative audience, which is also around the world. You just got to hook up with that in France, in Paris, in Berlin, in Moscow. They're out there. You got to know what audience you're going for, and the same with independent films and mainstream films. It's out there. You just got to find them and link them up.
How much has your love of music informed the way you've conducted your comedy career?
From touring mainly. I'm encyclopedic in comedy and film, and I am. I never thought I was cool enough for music. You know,
really?
I love piano, and I actually did grade 5 theory when I was a kid and took clarinet. I didn't want to play the clarinet. For some reason, I played the clarinet, which good players of the clarinet can play, make a great sound, but it's not a big, sexy one. You know, guitar.
Woody Allen plays it.
In jazz, jazz, it gets sexy. Right. But, you know, it just wasn't, no one was going to say, hey, that guy plays clarinet, I'm going to have sex with him right now when you're a teenager. This is mind.
Yeah.
Unless you make a brilliant sound of it. Anyway, so what British bands were doing touring America, I studied that, and I just thought that kind of approach, which U2 did as well, and then I thought I'd do that coming into, I knew I had to get New York. Just play New York until New York said, okay, you exist. and we like you. And the New York Times specifically said good things. And then the whole of America started opening up from that. But it was New York was the one I had to.
Was your Ed Sullivan moment like the HBO The Dress to Kill?
Yes,
special?
That was because we were doing that Dress to Kill with Arnold, my producer and promoter, sitting right here.
Yeah,
this was back in the West Beth Theater, which was his theater downtown in New York, and we'd played that in it was the third time into New York, and decided to take that show to San Francisco and L.A. Robin Williams said he would like to, he'd come in and put his name over the title, which was really helped. So I suddenly had amazing people turning up at the show. Eric Idle got involved as well. And then we said to HBO, would you like to do a special? And they said, yeah, we'd like to do a special. And I said, well, we've got it. We've already filmed it. And they went, oh, that's a bit weird because normally we do that.
Right, right.
And then they said, okay, we'll put it out. And then it got two Emmys. And then that was kind of weird.
Yeah.
And then it just...
you bucked the system.
But it wasn't mainstream as well. It was kind of alternative. People had to get it. They had to like Python. And they had to. It's intelligent and very silly, you know.
Yeah,
it has got squirrels with guns, but the squirrels know why they've got guns.
They do,
and they throw them away as well. So it's that was the thing. But it just sort of took off like this weird rocket. And then I haven't done those specials since then. I've kept it back because I'm trying to do things like Hannibal, playing in the Hannibal Lecter
TV
series.
I love that show. You're great, by the way.
Thank you.
But the series, which I tell you is awesome. Yeah. And
Mads Mikkelsen playing Hannibal, and
just terrific.
It's great. Brian Fuller is an executive producer on it, and it's just, it's a beautiful, it's a very dark series, but great to be in.
Did you always have this comfortable demeanor in front of an audience as a kid? Would you find yourself in front of groups of people being able to be charismatic?
Very good question. No, I didn't have that. I didn't even think, I liked comedy, but I just wanted to do drama, being an actor before. And then I was at an old boys' school, boarding school. It happened, my mother had died, so I'd gone to a boarding school. 16 girls suddenly reappeared, and there was one girl for every 20 boys. Very bad numbers on that. I wasn't doing soccer, football anymore, so I was just some sort of useless idiot. And I thought comedy, I got to be funny in chemistry lessons, specifically chemistry lessons, because the one teacher took the whole 2 years, and he wrote things on the board at a certain slow pace, and you could he would say, we put sodium chloride into our ears. No, not our ears, is our shut up. And I would keep throwing one line of that with a deliberate intention to up my hit rate.
He would leave you these gaps.
He
to,
just left
boom.
Natural gaps.
Oh,
and I kept saying, put it in the bin, and he'd throw chalk at me and say, just shut up, Izzard. You're not going to pass your chemistry exam if you keep doing that. And
he was like what we call Mad Libs. It's a thing we have here in the United States, which are stories where certain adjectives and nouns are left out and you have to supply them.
Right.
So you were doing that live.
I was trying to find the funny one, and my hit rate went up from 1 in 5 to about 1 in 2. And I remember by the summer term, this girl turning to me and said, I didn't even know you existed in the first 2 terms.
Wow.
But you're really funny now. So I just thought, hey, this is really working. So yeah, that's what I did, chemistry lessons. So after that, I got more confidence with the comedy thing. Then I went to university and said, I'm going to do shows.
Okay.
And now that you, interesting, for Hollywood Bowl, my training for Hollywood Bowl, because it's a big place, 15,000, whatever it was, out there, and it's a great place to play, but I did 3 months in Paris in French. So once you've done your show, sort of like for 71 gigs it was, in French, then you go and do Hollywood Bowl. It's really easy. It's very good ninja training for doing stand-up in the Hollywood Bowl.
You've made the point that stadium shows, large venues, it's a tough thing, especially since you obviously work so well in a more intimate setting, you know. But do you just soldier on and
it actually, you play it the same.
Okay.
I've pushed very hard to do arenas as opposed to stadiums. Yeah, I mean, well, Hollywood Bowl gets sort of in between the two, but the trick to playing larger gigs is you play them like a small gig, but the screens are so good, so powerful, and the sound is so good, and you get the really good engineers and technicians working on it, that I think the back of Hollywood Bowl is the best place to watch it, because you get the whole experience of the event,
of the audience,
and you can see quite clearly and hear clearly.
Tech has helped support someone who may not be inclined to command a venue of that size.
Yeah, you just, initially, I was trying to broadcast this thing in some sort of, as if I was, I was Lenin at the Russian Revolution or some Greek actor back in an amphitheater trying to get to the back. But in fact, the trick is you just knock it out like a 500-seater.
That's great.
And then you play around, and then you get very intimate, and then you actually draw them into you as opposed to trying to push your energy out.
I'm glad you said that about you know, sitting in the back of a venue because, you know, I love going to concerts and shows and everything. And I don't mind sitting in the back of the venue because you get this taste of
the event.
Like, yeah.
You get
because when you're in the front, you have no idea what's going on in the back. And I remember seeing Roger Waters. It was the only time in my life that I had a front row seat to anything. I felt like I missed out on everything.
Yeah.
You know,
you don't see the event.
They had the pig floating in the back.
Yeah.
I didn't even know it was there. I had no idea that it was there because I was in the front. And I, you know, so, but when you can see the lights and the people, you know, and all that sort of stuff, it just, for me, it adds to it.
And I do a thing which I call regression of technology. And I studied U2, I think at Giant Stadium.
Yes.
One of the big gigs. And
was
I
it the Zooropa or the
I can't remember. It would have been about 15
because I saw that yeah. tour, and they had the huge monitors. You had the TV remote, and he was
well, it was the cameras. The cameras do
Zoo
a
TV.
Lot of, they do a lot of yeah, they do a lot of zooming in, zooming out, a lot of editing, and so you can actually feel at some of these gigs. And I think you two do, you know, really expanded the medium, but you can feel that you're watching television in a field,
yeah,
you know, because yeah. there's a vision editor who's choosing what shots come up and what happens next. But what I do is I call it regression of technology in the big arenas, is I do a vertical screen instead of a landscape screen, vertical, like the same shape as me.
Right.
And it just tracks me across the stage. So whatever the small version of me, the real me does, the big screen version of me does.
That's
and
very cool.
And there's two side ones as well. So you get this thing that the audience choose what they're editing. Mm-hmm. So if you're sitting at the back and you're sitting at the front, you're seeing the same thing. Hmm. And the screen is actually more impressive than myself. Everyone says, I keep watching the screen and not looking at you. And I say, well, it's the same thing.
Right, yeah.
And that way, it's a pure energy that's coming out of there, as opposed to you're watching television in a field.
What's the toughest part about playing to an American audience? And are there jokes that you can't do here that you can do in the rest of the world?
No, America is a great audience. They're very giving. You know, they get it. People say that America doesn't understand irony. Well, middle America doesn't understand irony, but Americans who get irony, they get it. You know, it's just if you're going to be ironic, you know, if you're going to be slightly sarcastic and say, that's a good idea, then there's a lot of people in America says, okay, he doesn't mean that it's a good idea.
Right.
He's actually being ironic here. Well, some people say, oh, you see, that's a good idea. Those people never. Middle America doesn't get me. Middle Britain doesn't get me. Middle Russia doesn't get me. Middle Afghanistan wouldn't get me. Actually, that's too hot a potato to get you.
Yeah, stay away from there.
I'm not replacing
hey,
camp.
You know what? I wanted to do this real quick, Eddie, because we have our resident nail polish expert, Beth.
Hello, Beth.
Here, and I wanted her to inspect your nails and see if you have a well-done
yes.
job over there or not, because she does the most intricate designs on her own nails. Take a look and see if he's got a decent job.
They're amazing.
Are they?
Amazing.
Yeah, those are hand-painted, the flags. If you can see
really?
The five-sided stars on the European
Yeah, but who
flag.
Painted them?
Okay.
Her name is Sophie Harris from Illustrated Nail. If you look it up online, Illustrated Nail, she is, I think, one of the best nail designers in the world.
When did this become a thing? Because now you'll see postings of just this incredibly
crazy
elaborate Fabergé egg type design.
Well, it's because the gels were built. This is as a
card, that you know this.
As a card carrying transvestite, it's my area, baby.
Right. So,
because I'm an action transvestite, I do all the boys. I was going to be. I loved soccer as a kid.
Right. Yeah.
I was going to be in the military, but I'm also got the girly thing. That is the gift that I was given, and I've just played with
You've
these.
You've run
cards.
With it.
I've
yeah.
run with it and been honest about it.
Beth does her own, and she does these. For like special occasions when the new Game of Thrones series came out, she did them as dragon eggs, and she had to spend hours on them.
Yeah, it's brilliant work that's happening on it. And Sophie Harris back in England, she gets flown around the world to do it, and she's this young woman from Essex, and she's just got great attention to detail. And there's other good experts around the world, but she's top of the game.
It's all the rage. It's an amazing
and it's the new gels. You see, the Shellac started it, and then there's other ones like it, and they're hard as rock. So if you are an action transvestite like me, you can smash bags around, you can pick up things, you can even thump people if they're getting to, and they still don't,
they don't crack,
they
chip,
don't,
nothing,
they don't chip.
That, is that yeah. what that is? It's yeah. gel that you have on?
Yeah, it's the gels. Yeah, this yeah. is a shellac. Yeah,
but I need somebody to do the nail art. My nail salon stinks.
Well, hire Beth.
She goes
hire
to a place Beth. That's like the opium den in Taken.
Yeah.
No, that was yeah. the massage.
Oh, that's the massage parlor.
Eddie, can you see?
Yeah, Beth did those to her own.
Wow.
Nails,
yeah, that must have taken forever.
I know.
What?
Very detailed.
Wow.
I know.
Very impressive.
It's great stuff. It's become a whole new thing. It's the last 5 years.
Do we get close-up shots while you're doing your stand-up?
Not really. Because, I mean, when I'm playing here in Philadelphia, it's a theater, so it's not actually in the arena this time. So I keep changing it up and playing smaller places, bigger places.
By the way, if you're just tuning in, it's Eddie Izzard, and he is going to be at the Forest Theater May 3rd through the 5th. When did this tour start, by the way? You're making this the most expansive tour, or you're trying to, ever.
Most extensive, yes. Extensive. I'm trying to find the right adjective, because people say, you claim it's the biggest. I didn't say it's the biggest, it's the most extensive. So just the most countries. So it started about March, late March last year.
Do you have an end date in sight?
I did 2 months in Germany, get my German up to speed. I did a test a week in Madrid to get my Spanish, so I could do 15 minutes in Spanish, which I did in L.A., to test out how Spanish works in the West Coast of America. And then once I get up to an hour and a bit, I can take that down into South America as well.
Is all this honing, because I know you have you're preparing something for June 6th for D-Day, is that correct?
Yes, I've got this crazy plan. I always go back for the veterans, the Normandy Veterans Association of Britain, and there's of course American veterans, Canadian veterans, three French veterans, and also Germany is invited to the commemorations as well of D-Day, because since 45, Germany's tried to be an exemplary country.
Sure.
And Hitler kidnapped it for 12 years, and that was a very black period of their past. So I thought I should do a gig in English and French. I thought, no, I'll do it in German and then English and then French. So I'm doing three shows in three languages in 3 hours on the 6th of June. I'm flying from Chicago, coming out back in right down into Paris, driving up to Normandy, get there at 11 a.m. on the 6th of June. I'll go to some of the events, and then at 7 p.m. in German, 8 p.m. in English, 9 p.m. in French, sleep a little bit, get back to Paris, fly back and play Chicago on the 7th. Of June, the next day.
I assume you're someone that doesn't tire easily? I mean, you have a lot of energy?
You know, I run a lot of marathons, and so I've become more of an athlete now, which I was when I was a kid, athletic, and then everyone sort of just fades away as they get older. I've decided to actually get more active as I get older, so I ran 43 marathons in 51 days.
That's what I was going to ask. 43 marathons, and this was a part of a charity drive, and it's for a British program?
It's called Sport Relief. They encourage people who are non-Olympians to do stuff, and Olympians as well. But just ordinary people to go out and do it, or people who might be celebrity for something else. Like I was known for comedy and drama.
So, and prior, you had never been much of a runner?
No.
Why did you take that on?
I thought it was an adventure. Yeah. It was positive. It was health. I thought that I could change my shape and get back into a different thing. It was a wild, crazy idea. I trained for 6 weeks, which is too short, really. Yeah. And I really learnt on the run. But after 10 marathons, it gets easier, guys.
Does it?
Does it?
So you get the first 10 under your belt, and it's cakewalk.
Well, you're going to be in town this weekend, this Sunday. It's not a marathon, but it's like the biggest race in the city, the Broad Street Run, which is the Forest Theater on Broad Street. It's not, right? Chestnut or whatever, but either way, the Broad Street Run, it's this 10-mile run that starts by Temple, goes down Broad
Street.
Very good.
Yes, I do this with it. I do feral marathons because everyone says, I ran these 43. Well, are there 43 marathons in the UK in this line? I actually just measure them. I just measure them and do them.
Oh, okay.
I got my dad once to drive me 26.2 miles from home and just said, drop me here, Dad. I'll run back.
And abandon you.
Yeah, and it's great. It's kind of beautiful because it's just you and the space, and I talk to cows and dogs and cats, and I stop and feed ducks.
There we go.
It's just, I call them feral marathon.
Has anyone recognize you while you're running, and do you say, I'm sorry, I'm running, I have to keep going, or can you stop?
No, I stop and chat. Because people said, when I did the 43, well, good time, and I'm not bothered about time, you just got to do it.
Yeah.
So 12 hours was my longest. I was doing interviews in the middle of that and stuff, but 12 hours is a long time to be out there. But it didn't matter. I actually had misjudged how long the marathon was. I thought I was finished at the top of the hill. This was through Belfast in Northern Ireland, and I thought I was finished, and I realized I had another 6 miles to go, which is not a good way to do it. So I've mentally worked out how to run marathons, and I count down the miles or the kilometers as I go through them. So I go, only 25 miles to go, and only 20 miles to go. And so I never get it wrong now, because once when I forgot the 6 miles of extra stuff, it almost killed me.
I'm sure. I have to say, now, on this show, periodically, I will employ a James Mason impression.
Oh,
and
right.
I know that you do as well.
Well, yes, I remember when I started
trying to do James Mason. It was from Mr. Kaplan from North by Northwest. Yes, you,
that's right.
Why do you live here, Mr. Kaplan? You obviously have been drinking when you come trying to do James Mason. I started doing it, playing a board game with another friend who was also doing James Mason. Back to me, and he did it in this way. It was interesting, and I found it... I don't normally do it, actually, the first person, because you were doing the impressions earlier. Yeah. But, yeah, I do like him, Sean Connery. I'm bad at impressions.
I'm bad, but for some reason, I think it was one of the first impressions. It's James Mason, and Mr. Barlow wants to see you.
Yeah. That's very good. I like
Joe,
that.
Joe,
yes.
you've got to be alive, Joe.
It's very good. It's weird. It's like a voice sitting inside a voice, isn't it?
It's back here. It's down low.
It's where did he find it? Because he's from Yorkshire, you see. And
right.
Yorkshire should be. If you'd heard more Yorkshire in it, it would have been more like that. No, right. That's West Country. Hang on. All right, love. That is more Yorkshire. So it would be more like. Okay, I can't even mix the two together. All right.
You would have a much more attuned ear to that. But so, I first journeyed to the center of the earth. We went down into the bowels of the earth.
Bowels of the earth, yes.
Bowels is a good James.
Not the knees of the earth, the larynx. With the bowels, and I thought, well, I shouldn't really be here in the bowels. Yeah? I should be more up by the stomach.
I'm more towards the top, perhaps, the back of the throat, where that little thing hangs.
Well, I used to have Sean Connery and James Mason doing where Sean would go, sure. I had James Mason as God saying, Noah, make me an ark, will you? And he's going, what the hell's an ark? Do you mean a boat? Because you could use the word boat instead of ark. No one will ever use the word ark ever again. After this thing, do you want it like curvy shaped? Do you mean like it's one slice of a circle? Is that what you're talking about? No, just an arc, you know. Right. And then, he was going, a speedboat's better. Let's get a speedboat. Because then all the animals can sit on the side and their ears will flap in the wind. That'd be a good photo for the Bible. I quite like that Sean Connery was.
That's great. That's great.
Good publicity for the Bible.
Hey, Eddie, are you friends with Craig Ferguson?
I am. I just went on his show just before the thing. I think Craig has done a phenomenal job.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I chatted to him over the years. He is interesting because he wasn't, you know, an actor, and he was doing films and TV series before that. So I think he's felt, you know, after 10 years, he can come out and... You know, if you do a lot of chat shows, you can get stuck, and that's what you'll do for the rest of your life. So he has an option now to come out and go back to doing other more varied things that like he was doing before. So he's chosen to come
very
out.
Very talented. I mean, you, I guess anybody who's an artist at their core. I mean, you do the stand up and continue to do the stand up, and obviously other stuff and the stage stuff, plays, very important to you. We were mentioning James Mason was in. I'm going to do a complete 6 degrees thing here, but he was in The Verdict, which is a David Mamet script, and you've appeared in David Mamet productions, a couple of them,
two,
right?
Yeah. I did Race, and I did The Cryptogram.
Is that for an actor to say David Mamet dialogue? One of the pinnacles.
It is. It's good meaty stuff to go in. I mean, when I did Race, you are saying the N-word, you're saying the C-word, you're using most of the A-word, the B-word, the C-word, the D-word, the E-word, the F-word.
Classic man.
All the words that can be in there and full strength. And it's great to be in there and doing that.
Right.
I did Day and the Death of Joe Egg on Broadway, and that got a Tony nomination. So I love doing theatre, but film is my first love.
Film is the first love.
I broke into Pinewood Studios when I was 15 because I just thought, how do you get into films? I just think you just got to walk into the studios. And when I say break in, I really was, I was just trying to get in there. And I found on a map where it was. So I was a kid, I was 15, and I just took a train to London and an underground tube to this place called Uxbridge, then a bus. And then I just walked up and said, can I come in? And they said, piss off, kid.
The dream has been realized.
Will the next film be absolutely anything that we'll see you in? I was reading about that.
I could, yes, that's a small role in that. It's just a cameo role. That's a Terry Jones from Monty Python film. But there's also, I just did with Dustin Hoffman and Kathy Bates, a boy choir. That's a drama I've just done. And absolutely anything is a comedy. Boy choir. And then there's another film where I played a Scotsman. I played Sir Robert Watson Watt, who invented radar. So it's an interesting story. Before America became part of the war, we were just battling on our own against the Nazi hordes. And the RAF did very well, but we had radar. We could tell when the Luftwaffe was coming over because of this guy, Sir Robert Watson Watt. So that's it's a little tiny film. I don't know if it'll make it here to America, but I was very pleased to do that.
Very cool. You're also in one of my favorite culty Day of the Triffids.
Oh, yes.
Science fiction movie. And you were in a mini-series version of that. Has that made it over here yet?
I'm not sure, but Dougray Scott, yes.
Yeah.
I love doing that. I played a psychotic person and who survived a plane crash. In a very unusual way, and some people were very annoyed by what I was scripted to doing it,
right,
but I just
right.
thought it was brilliant. He's completely asocial, but he's someone who just cannot interact with people. And when he realizes that everyone's gone blind on the plane and they're going down, he takes all the life jackets from underneath people's seats, and they're all screaming and sitting there blind. And he goes into the loos and he opens up all the life jackets as a sort of buffer, and then the plane crashes and he's the only one left alive, which is slightly crazy, but could work.
It could work. Why not? And Day of the Triffids will take it. Yeah.
Well, we're so happy that you spent some time to come by here today, and we're glad you're in Philadelphia.
Yeah, great to talk to you. Great to be back here. I know the history of your place. I'm quite encyclopedic on the Revolutionary War and the Civil War. And
you're one of the few people in Philadelphia currently who is right now. So.
Right. I think we're planning to go and see Gettysburg today. Yeah,
oh, wow. That is a mind blower. It is.
I was hoping to go and do a gig there tonight, but they're doing exams. They say we can't do this right now. We were trying to get in there, but I'll just go and see the battlefield.
You are working your ass off.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It is a bit. But I've been trying to get to Gettysburg for ages, and that speech that Lincoln made. You were talking about the Lincoln film.
It's amazing.
It's interesting that to do good things, countries, people have to go through such weird...
A painful process.
Yeah, just the hoops and the leaps for him to get that through, to make the 13th Amendment, was just kind of crazy, but just trying to force it through.
And it's not, when you get on that ground, it's not lost on you what transpired. Yeah,
it's pretty amazing.
Pickett's charge and all that.
Well, enjoy, Eddie. Thanks so much for coming by. We appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you, guys.
Eddie Izzard, ladies and gentlemen.
This summer. Surprise! The MM Army is hitting house parties throughout the Delaware Valley, delivering our summer house party pack. Got a backyard barbecue, pool party, summer shindig? No matter what the party, we're going to help you get it started right. With food from Philly's own Dietz and Watson, premium meats and artisan cheeses, a case of Bud Light Lime or Bud Light Orange, and backyard party games courtesy of Jeff D'Ambrosio Auto Group. Hit up the contest page at WMMR.com to register your party to win MMR's Summer House Party Pack from 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks your summer.
U.S. researchers say that their series of experiments reveal that women can lower the pitch of their voice and increase the hoarseness to sound more attractive, while men who tried to do the same failed. Basically, they're saying that women can turn on a sexy voice and men cannot.
Okay.
Wait, but it's got to be lower and raspier?
Yeah. It's not going to be higher and squeakier.
I wouldn't describe that as a sexy voice.
I know what you're at. I do like a sultry.
I think, Kathy, what it means is changing it from your normal to here I am speaking now to here I am speaking now.
Okay.
So you know it's what not I mean? like this.
No.
If you're going to the convenience store, pick me up some Pall Malls.
It would mean someone that you hear speaking a certain way, and then when they change it, it indicates to you, oh.
I am so wet. Oh, my God. It's like the sump pump stopped working down there. It's a flood in my pants.
Oh my.
Are you horny?
Oh my God.
No.
Oh my God.
I am so wet. Unbelievably sopping. It's a disgusting swampy mess in my knickers.
Knickers?
That's not sexy.
I may have biffed.
I may have biffed. Or sharded, I don't know. Let's just say there's a stew going on down there and leave it at that. Are you horny?
That's sexy.
Yeah.
No, what?
But hold on, you just described it and you did it.
What?
When you described it to me.
Yeah, okay, this is what I'm taking from this. I just think that women don't interpret it as men do on, you know what I mean? Men hearing it from women find it more sexy than women hearing it from men.
You, in other words, Kathy, you may not be aware of tonally, this is a response that, I know.
I don't think I've ever done this.
I'm pre-law, trust me. But you actually have a nice tonality to your voice. It would not take a lot for you to get into a sexier. When you have
no idea how to do it.
Have you ever, like when you would talk to it when you in the days when you were slutting around. You were picking up guys.
Teachers in high school.
Would you, teachers in high school. Would you...
No.
Would your voice in a quiet, hey, you know, would you add a little something to it? Maybe not even knowing you were doing it.
I really, honestly, I don't think so.
All right, okay. Kathy, if it ever comes to sexy time and you have to talk.
Right.
No.
Does your voice...
That hurt!
Can I ask you a pretty basic question? How would you flirt ever?
Right.
Well, so I'm like, I mean, you guys know me. I'm outgoing and like, so I think the flirting is sort of like a, hey, like maybe like a more, I would touch your arm or something like that,
like
as opposed to like,
narple.
Hey, you want to go to the bar and get a drink?
Yeah, that would make me laugh.
Say that again.
I would like to get women who feel that they have a sexy voice to call us right now. 215-263-WMMR, just because I feel like getting a Woody.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I'd like to hear what the sexy voice is.
On the other side of the coin, when I've been told that I have you get it a lot more. You have a resonant voice. You have a sexy voice. I can tell that, and I'm a guy. When I get the, when I'm, I guess, at this tone, or I'm on the phone, and I'm doing this, could you help me? That I'll get, oh, you have such a, like, a sexy voice. I'll get that periodically. I don't think it happens as often as, say, a woman with a sexy voice will hear that she has a sexy voice. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Or what am I saying?
No, I don't know what you're saying. I will say this, though. And I found this out just a few months ago. There's this woman, and I wouldn't necessarily... she's not sexy. She is not a sexy woman. She's not somebody that I'm actually physically attracted to or whatever. But I heard her laugh. Okay.
And you found that attractive?
Oh my God.
Sexy?
Yeah.
Was it mine?
No. It was such a cute laugh. And
there's cute laugh and sexy laugh. Though.
Was it sexy or cute? It made this, well, it was cute, but it made this person more attractive to me.
Do we know this person?
No.
Okay.
No. Like, you know, I barely know this person.
Okay. There's a sultry, sexy laugh. That's kind of like,
yeah. Oh, I know what you're saying.
Not like that.
No. It was just, you know, it was like a
gobble
giggle.
You up.
Yeah. Can you guys try it?
Oh.
I want you guys
sexy?
To try.
Sexy?
Yeah.
Say, baby, put down that pipe and get my pipe up.
There we go. That's sexy. Here it is. You ready?
Yeah. Okay.
Right, this is it. I'm going to make you feel so good.
Have you? That's Casey's.
That's my line.
That's Casey's line.
All right, Preston. With Kathy's question, is there a spiel? Is there a presentation? Is there a vocal quality that you affect when you are trying to get Rochelle in the mood?
Well, with three kids, it's like,
let's do it.
You want to do it? Let's
go. Yeah,
let's go. We have time.
Go.
No, but I mean, you may go from talking in this manner, you know, where you're just having a conversation like this, and you can't immediately dive right into it like that. It's got to be a kind of a slow.
Take your panties off. Take your panties off now.
You have to slowly kind of drift down a little bit at a time, and taking steps that we are now. Moving into this direction. I'm doing it. You're stepping on it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm doing it.
Do it, man.
So you go, you speak in this manner, and then, like I said, as you can hear now, my tone is kind of slowly going down.
Shifting.
I'm getting a tiny bit more whispery.
Okay.
And why don't we take this to another level?
Right. You get this.
Let's get It's a little smoky in here. Why don't we?
Doesn't she laugh at you and run out?
I don't say this to my wife.
No.
I say this to my mistress.
Yes. You know, he's paying her, so she responds properly.
This is speaking to somebody who you're hoping to engage with. I mean, because as long as we've been married for so long that kind of the hit on, hey, let's get it on, starts off a little jokey.
Right.
Yeah. Couldn't help but notice, but your ass is on my face.
Right. It's different now. I'm talking for people who are trying to attract someone else.
Okay.
Sure.
All right.
Sure. And I believe that there are. I used to date a woman who had an incredibly sexy voice, and she could use it to get stuff and get things done. And I would see her in stores and stuff. She would use that tone. And for guys, it generated something. We responded. Men responded to it. Very effective.
I mean, that's why there were sex lines for men to call with women on the other end. I don't think it was the other way around. I don't think ladies ever called sex lines. I don't know.
Preston, was there ever a sex line the other? I don't ever remember seeing commercials. Ladies, call to hear guys with baritone voices.
Yeah. Right. I got to tell you, the sex lines where they over. Oh, hey, I find those not sexy.
Oh, Casey, there are. I'm not going to name any commercials that I've heard in particular, but
here we go.
Especially when the girls put on the voice like this.
This weekend only.
Ladies, you're not, or fellas, you're not going to believe what you're going to see on stage. I can't stand it.
Comes over, television star Dustin Diamond.
It's overdoing it too much.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Jenny, and I just turned 18, and I've never been hornier, ever.
Shall we go to some sexy ladies?
Yeah.
Sexy voice ladies? All right, let's hear, I'm going to hear normal speaking voice first.
Right.
And then I want to go into what you consider to be your sexy delivery. Hello, Amy, how you doing?
Good morning, and Preston, let me say, it was working for me. My panties fell right off.
There you go. There you go.
And actually, that does with my husband's voice. He has a very sexy voice, but it's not when he's trying. Sometimes it just happens.
So, Amy, what makes your husband's voice, we're trying to get the male side of this as well, what makes your husband's voice sexy? Is it deep? Does it have a rumble to it? Okay.
Yeah, it's deep. And sometimes he just doesn't realize. And I think a lot of it for both sides is when you're talking softer, because I tend to be kind of loud.
Right.
And so I've noticed, and believe it or not, through work in the past years, that when I try to, like, talk softer
right.
and lower, that then people, I've even had, you know, clients say, oh, your voice is really sexy today, which is completely inappropriate. But so it's like when I try to just lower my voice.
Say, oh, quieter. Say, oh, Preston, you really do it for me.
Oh, Preston, you really do it for me.
That's hot.
That is a viable, and you're right, Amy. A shift from the way you normally are to that, it works for us.
And it was subtle.
She got a little breathy too.
Yeah, it was a little subtle, which is key. Yeah.
And it was subtle. You're right. Yeah. It wasn't too trying too hard.
Oh, Preston,
Amy,
you do it for me.
You do voiceover work, it says here?
I used to. I haven't since we moved out here, but I used to do voiceover work, and I think I just became a lot more conscious of my voice and how I used it.
Yeah, you got it. I think you've got the sexy thing working when
absolutely.
You need it.
Thank you, Amy.
Have a good day.
You too. See ya. My wife is on the phone line.
Okay.
She wants to jump in on the conversation. Hey, baby.
That's not the voice I heard two out of the three times that we attempted to have
Jesus
sex over
Christ.
The weekend.
I didn't even.
It was more like, JD, can't they just give us some time? We don't need a lot of time.
That's exactly what I was saying. I'm like, we need like a 7-minute window. And this is a whole other conversation. We're getting ready to be intimate, okay?
Right. Yeah.
And the door is locked. We go through all the steps of locking the double, you know, getting set.
Turning the
intercom
on.
Clothes are off. We're lying down. We're getting ready for it. And before we start, I go, how much time do you think we have before something happens? And what did you say, hon?
I said 5 and you said 7.
No, you said 7 and I said, if that. And how long did we get?
About 4 minutes.
And there was crying and screaming. Mom!
I don't even know how you do it.
I got hit in the face.
He's laying there. He just slams his hands down next to him, throwing a temper tantrum. Like, I don't need that long.
So no sexy. The sexy voice is gone between you and I, honey.
So when you guys have to go do damage control, obviously, Rochelle, you have to take care of the business because Preston's pitching a 10. It's not like he can go downstairs.
Oh,
right?
Dude, it goes...
Away fast. Rochelle has a sexy voice, Preston.
She does.
When she lays on the sexy voice.
Very much so.
She did some drops for you.
Mm-hmm.
give us your best sexy voice, Rochelle.
I can't do that on the spot.
Ooh, that kind
you're starting
it.
To get there.
Yeah, deny it more. You can't do it.
She's got a resonance.
I tell you what, say this. My flapjacks are very fluffy.
But my flapjacks are not fluffy because I had a BBG.
Ooh, BBG. All right. I love you, honey.
All right. Love you. I'll talk to you later.
I love you.
You didn't get one.
No.
We didn't.
Flapjacks.
You didn't give her time.
Let me go next to Nicole. Hey, Nicole. How you doing?
Good morning.
Hey. Oh. Hey. She's Jenny, and she just turned 18.
18, and she's never been horny.
Sounded like.
Yeah.
How old are you, Nicole?
I am 24.
24. Okay. Yeah, I already like
this.
What
would
I'm
be
hearing.
Yeah,
I can tell.
Oh, you like that?
See? Now I love it.
You're good.
You're good.
You like it like this?
See, you've got a very
playful
sound to your voice, and guys are teasing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Do you have you been told that you have a sexy voice?
I have.
Okay. Give us something that you might say to a guy that's, you know, PG rated,
right?
That we could that might kind of make them tingle in their nether regions.
Do you want me to come over tonight?
Ooh.
Over.
Yeah.
I do want you to come over
and stay over.
Bring Moik
over. No, that sounds really good. Now, is this how you normally speak? How you're speaking to us right now?
Yes, it is how I normally talk.
Okay, so you're all the time. Now, if you really want to turn it on, though, can you take it to another level?
Not really.
Oh, okay. Well,
I'm like just listening to her talk. She that playful thing is we'll do it for. And Kathy, does it seem bizarre from your ear to hear us responding to her voice this way? Does it seem goofy, or do you understand why we're responding to her voice?
No, I get it. Hear it. I just don't know that I could do it.
Nicole, do you use it to your advantage? You ever use it to pick up a guy at a bar or something like that?
Absolutely.
And they respond positively?
Yeah.
She's got a cute laugh.
Give me a Nicole. Please come over. I need someone to snuggle with. Say that.
Can you please come over? I need somebody to snuggle with.
Yeah, that wasn't quite as sexy.
Nah. Yeah, do it again and do it. Take your clothes off.
Thinking about it. That's probably why.
No. You're doing fine. Just naturally. You know,
I think it's hard for women to be spoon-fed a line and then give it in a sexy manner. It's got to come naturally.
Yeah. True. You know? True. Well, I like Nicole's voice. Definitely.
I do too.
Yeah.
I think it's hot. Thank you, Nicole. Do you want to hear if there's any guys that want to try to do it?
Yeah. Casey. I think guys should give a shot.
Interns.
All right, the interns.
All of our interns in the studio right now, male and female.
Intern roll call.
Yeah, let's get them in here.
Roy.
Oh, we're going to get a sexy voice from Kill Bill.
Hey, I'll tell you where I buried my last girlfriend.
All right, listen. All right, here they come.
If you're in love.
Yeah. Are you ready for love? If you're ready for love.
Bill with the voice jammer, yeah.
All right, so Bill.
Get the
microphone.
Get up close to the microphone because you're going to want to get all the tone. Give us a...
First, let's hear him speak in his normal voice. Are you...
No, this is my normal voice.
Okay. Yeah. You dating anybody right now?
No, I'm single.
Okay. Have you ever kissed a girl?
Yeah.
Okay,
just
checking. All right, so if...
No, a live girl.
Live girl.
If you were to try to, you know, you're having a conversation with a girl and it's looking like you're interested in her and you want to kind of, you know, lure her into your van.
pickup truck.
What tone of voice would you take and what would you say?
All right. Hey, how you doing?
Good line. Yeah. Good opening line.
It's a good line.
I'm doing well. How are you? We're going to role play here a little bit.
Okay? Oh, all right.
Yeah, I'm doing good.
Let him role play with Kathy. It might make
right,
it.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. That might be a little strange.
All right, Bill, I have your next line after, hey, how you doing? Would you call yourself a bleeder?
You're disgusting. All right, go ahead, Bill.
All right, start over.
All right. Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Can I buy you a drink?
Yes.
I'm kind of lost.
I love your nipples.
Go ahead, go with Cease.
Yeah. All right. I love your nipples.
Thank you. That's
I
really
think
nice
these
of
two
you.
Are going
to
hit it off.
Yeah.
All
right, and your next line, Bill. I have a necklace made of human ears.
I have a necklace made of human ears.
Yeah, I think Bill's doing a good job.
He's doing pretty well. Yeah. Do you have a bit of game in a bar, Bill?
I think you need a drink of water too.
Stop smacking your
lips. Yeah.
Do you hear that?
Yeah. It's the iron in the blood I drink that dries out my mouth.
What happens when you chew on human flesh?
Here, Bill. There's a big bottle of water right there. I want you to take a big sip.
Nah, I'm sick. I can't.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, and he lets us know. Yeah. So the same guy we paint as a serial killer is very conscientious about not getting us sick. We appreciate that.
I think you sound all right, Bill. Yeah. We just need to work on your dialogue a little bit. But that's not what this segment's about. It's about tone of voice and delivery.
Exactly. All right. He did a good job.
Here.
Peyton. Now a girl. Peyton.
Peyton, come on over here. He's sick, so spray that mic. So
Yep. Can hear
now,
us
Peyton
well.
does a radio show at her school. So you have a good command of the way you use your voice. Do you have a sexy voice that you put on?
I don't think so. I don't know. I feel like I do more of like a flirty, like I don't
try to be like mysterious or like sultry or anything.
Right.
Do you change your voice up at all when you do the radio show, or is it just pretty much a straight ahead delivery?
I don't know. I guess I have like a really like a phone voice.
Yeah.
So I guess I probably do that a little bit.
Okay.
All right. Well, the study says that women have the ability to turn on the sexy voice more than men do. So at least give us your best shot.
Do you want to role play with her?
Do you want to look at Bill?
Let's go into the world of fantasy. Let's say you're interested in me.
Okay.
And you know, we've been talking for a little bit, and then you want to take it to the next level. How would you? And you don't even have to look at me because that's too difficult to
do. Look at me.
Yeah. Well, how would you change your voice from the way you're speaking right now, and just pretend that you're going to say something?
Maybe like, hey, you wanna go get a drink? I don't know.
We're already having a drink.
We're already having a drink.
Do you want another drink?
Let's drink more.
let's say you want to get out of this place and go somewhere else, and you're trying to proposition me to go with you.
Hey, you want to get out of here?
It kind of works. She's got a good tone
like
to her voice.
A cute voice.
And,
yeah.
But also she's got the firepower the way she looks behind it. So that, I mean, that would work.
Now try to augment it. I mean, like ridiculous sexy. Really push it.
Hey, do you want to get out of here and go to my place?
See, she can turn it on.
She can do it.
Now, you're not comfortable doing it because you would never do that, but you do have the ability to do it.
I guess so.
How about this?
Maybe I should try it more.
Hey, aren't you Kenny Knight?
Oh, Jesus.
Hey, aren't you Kenny Knight?
That was hot.
I feel that it makes us look stupid that we respond this way to it, but guys, I think we respond far more to a sexy voice on a woman than I think women respond to a sexy voice on guys. We're just naturally more.
Yeah.
We lock on those things.
Well, and we're guys, so we want to grab onto any straw that is presented to us. So I think that automatically when that tone comes on, we're like, dude, she wants to touch it. Yeah. I mean, this is, you know,
right. Yeah.
Oh, you know, immediately the hormones start to flow. All right, next intern, Peyton.
Well done, Peyton.
Who's next? Who do we have over there? I can't even see.
Dan.
Oh, yes.
Sexy chick.
Yeah. 07. How you doing, man?
Good. How about you?
Good.
Now, Dan's a good-looking
guy.
You don't have some game, though, right? You say you're not good at the
late. I have a decent game.
Okay, all right.
I do all right for myself.
He's got a good voice,
His voice
too.
Is good.
Yeah. I do a radio show at Temple, too. So okay. That's something I work on as well.
So you're Jewish.
Oh, yeah, naturally.
School. Oh, I got it. Okay.
Yeah.
So when was the last time you got some? Like, where you picked a girl up and you used your sexy voice?
That I picked one up with a sexy voice? Mm-hmm. Probably never, because I feel like if I'm out at a bar, I think maybe I'm doing a sexy voice in my head because I'm a little drunk. So in my head, it's like, hey, how's it going? But in reality, you know it's, hey, how's it going?
Because it's so loud. Yeah. You can't use a sexy voice in a bar.
Sure. Then let's pretend that we're on the phone. Because that's a you're hearing it through the handset coming back in your ear. You can, you know, you can really feel the resonance of your voice. So you're going to, you know, drop it down a little bit. So if you're on the phone with somebody and it seems like it's going the right place, maybe you want to proposition them to meet up with you somewhere. Give us a little bit of what you might say. Not just how you would say it.
Am I role playing with anybody here?
Just role play with
Kathy.
Yeah.
Kathy, all right. Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Let's stop with, hey, how's it going?
How else would you start it?
Yeah. Because you're, all right, never.
It's okay, go ahead. Right. I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. What are you up to?
reading a Bic.
Yeah.
Hey, how much do you weigh?
What Bic are you reading?
How much do you weigh?
I'm just sitting here. What are you up to?
Nothing.
You just sound tired.
Yeah.
You want to come over?
I think he sounds hot.
To my ear, that
I got
be,
Preston at least. Yeah.
Sounds like a hot dude.
No women, but
that,
yeah.
I agree with you. That would be an effective, to my ear, maybe this shows how we perceive things differently.
Yeah.
He sounds confident. There's a sort of a, it seems to me, a sexy tone. Preston, correct?
Yeah.
So all the guys on the show.
Yeah.
Which is, that's a positive sign.
It's what we've long suspected anyway.
I'm not sold yet. They ask her how she's doing like five different ways. Yeah. Let's get to the meat of the conversation.
Well, because everyone keeps cutting them off. We couldn't have a conversation. You guys kept butting in.
Not me.
Go ahead.
I was sitting back with my hands in my pants.
A little bit more role playing because we got to move this along. We have two more interns to get to. Go ahead.
I'd really like it if you came over.
What are you doing right now?
Making a bowel movement.
Just sitting on the toilet.
All right, get
this
out
is
here.
Obviously not going to work. But I thought that Dan had the ability to change into sexy mode. You heard his voice clearly switch.
He did, yeah.
Yeah.
You know who gets it all the time?
I'm dropping the kids off at the pool. Oh, God.
What? Who gets it all the time is Jackson.
Oh, my God.
Women respond very favorably to his voice.
Of course they do.
They love it.
Jackson gets way down there.
Oh, way down.
And he does this a lot. He goes, eh.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's thinking about what he's going to say. I'm thinking about what I'm going to do to you.
I'm going to bend you over a table and violate you nine ways till Sunday.
Give me a second. I got to think about this. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what's on my iPod? You screaming in ecstasy.
Jackson has a sultry voice.
Yeah.
No question. Oh, he's got the most resonant voice. Him and Pierre of the entire staff.
Yeah. You're also a big fan of his body, too. We found that out on Drunk Day a couple of years ago.
He's dude's in shape, man. I wish I looked like him.
Do you want to hear Pierre's very sexy?
Yeah.
Hey, everybody.
That's a panty dropper.
Yeah.
All right, next intern. You're going to kill me because I don't know your name. Sam.
Sam.
Doing, Sam? I'm terrible. How long you been here?
A year? 5 months.
Okay. All right, Sam. Do you have a voice that you can alter into sexy mode ever?
I haven't really had to be sexy in like a while. I think I've been my voice for quite some time.
Well, you're spoken for, right? So you have a long-term boyfriend, so you don't have to worry about that now. But
our version of sexy is like I changed the litter box today.
Right, you're like married.
You're like married.
Yeah. It's great. I'm 23. Pretty much and I'm there.
Oh, so just give us your sexiest. I changed the litter box today.
Oh, hey, baby. You know, I changed the litter box today. What are we doing later?
Oh, my God. That's not good. Bad.
It's not bad.
I know you were joking. You're doing a parody. Changed the litter box.
Took out the trash, did some dishes. Yeah. Whole evening's free.
Yeah.
See, she has really sharp S's, Steve.
Yeah.
And as sharp S's work for me, too. Yeah.
When a girl starts, I can't even pretend to do it.
Say, the kitty litter was full of cat turds.
Yeah.
The kitty litter was full of cat turds.
Yeah. You have the sexiest voice so far.
That's awesome.
That's hot.
Nice. Yeah.
Thank you.
That's hot.
I could leave with one thing, I'm glad it's that.
I'll tell you what it is. So what you hope to hear when you're plowing away.
Mm-hmm. Really? Because I thought that was the most annoying part of my voice.
No.
I feel like I sound like a valley girl with that.
No, but to my ear, and this is just on a very visceral level, if we're talking about what turns us on in an auditory fashion, that does.
It's whatever this thing is that, you know what I mean?
Do you know what they call that?
By itself sounds stupid.
The technical name for it, I've come to learn, there was a special, I think it's called vocal fry. I think.
Interesting.
Yeah, like, I think that's what it's... Do a search on that, Nick.
Huh.
It was a PBS thing or some maybe on the Science Channel, and it was about ways we are seduced or that whole...
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Vocal fry.
Yeah. Vocal fry. Nice. Cool. All right, well, nice job, Sam.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, right. there's a point at which that can become annoying, though, the vocal fry. Like, if you're the girl that uses it all the time, like, you know who does is the Kardashians, the Paris Hiltons of the world. Like,
they
do it ad nauseum in an attempt to sound sexy. They do it on purpose.
Agreed.
And that kills it immediately. But if you do it as a natural part of how you're speaking, then that can be sexy.
And some of the overly sexy commercials try to use that too much. Sam's was perfect. Next intern.
Bernadette.
Hi.
How you doing, Bernadette?
Bernadette's sort of an all-American girl next door.
Beautiful
Neutrogena.
Smile. Yeah, absolutely. Bernadette, are you in a relationship?
Yes.
Okay, and how long have you guys been together?
A couple months.
Okay, so it's still fairly new. So when you want to get in the mood, do you change your tone of voice a little bit?
No. I just giggle awkwardly.
Really? You're a giggler.
Okay.
So giggling's
cute.
Giggling
can be sexy.
Really sexy. So, but do you possess a sexy voice?
Not that I know. It's
that you change from your normal speaking voice?
Not really. It's more like Kathy. I'm kind of outgoing, so I'll talk to people regularly, but I don't really like get deep.
Hey, let's take this back to my place. Try that.
Hey, let's take this back to my place.
It's like Ron Ronnie.
She's on a game show.
Let's take this back to my place.
Lots of sex will ensue, and they'll send you home with a case of Turtle Wax. Who's the next contestant on My Vagina?
Oh, yeah, no.
And there goes your motor.
Thank you, Bernadette. Nice try, though.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Now, a friend of the show, Ra, is on the line. Now, he's been told he has... I don't hear Ra as having a sexy voice,
oh,
but
I
that's
bet
all right.
He can do it.
All right, well, let's find out. Hey, Ra, how you doing, bud?
Hey, please respect my privacy, okay? I just want you guys to respect my privacy.
There we go. We will.
I think he has a sexy, normal voice.
Oh.
All right, talk it up to Kathy, Ra.
Hey, Kathy. Hey, beautiful. How you doing? Want to salsa in yoga pants?
Yes, I certainly do, Ra.
Yeah. Let's go.
Okay, now, listen, and I will give this to Ra is black, and I think that black guys using words like baby and stuff that are much more sexy than a white guy saying it.
I agree.
Real quick, the vocal fry thing.
Yeah.
Hilarious. I used to have, there was a girl at work, and this is all she used to do, just on random, every time I'd at the office, inappropriate, right? You're just sitting there, and she'd walk and go, oh, yeah. So you know that point, oh, yeah, in your ear? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And she would just do it for no reason and just fall out, man. Yeah. But I work in customer service, and I've been told by nurses and professional people, he's in a sexy voice. And I'm like, we're on the phone on international lines, and okay. Well, I don't know how to respond to that, but what's your number? You know, so, I mean.
You have what you have, Ra, is a voice that fights the natural audio signal through a phone. It cuts through. It's sharp.
Yep.
You have a little bit of a fry that's not applied overly. Mm-hmm. And right. I think that has a nice tone. I do think he does have a sexy voice.
Yeah, yeah.
And I believe I have some of the bacon.
Yeah. And you can like, do you believe that about coming out of your mouth, the word baby, as opposed to a white guy? It sounds kind of creepy when a white guy says it.
No, I don't think I think what it is if it's genuine.
Yes.
I think a lot of times, depending on where you're from and who you are, if you're speaking and you have confidence and you really mean it, I think what happened with a lot of people that you were trying to get to say certain things is not things that they would say.
Yeah.
And they felt nervous because they were put on the spot. But a lot of people who speak, they probably definitely use a sexy voice.
I think it's a difference between you when you were speaking to Kath, you said baby. It's a difference between you saying, hey, baby, and say, like, Bill saying, I ate a baby.
Hey, all right.
Those are the differences.
Hilarious.
All right. Thanks, Ra.
Hey, guys. Love you.
All right. See you later, man. All right. So, I mean, you know, I think there are guys that maybe have masculine, seductive voices that ladies might respond to. But overall, this particular study says that ladies can pull it off better than guys can, or at least indicate, I am now interested in you. You know what I mean?
I believe it. I believe it.
And our species just goes, you know, oh,
yeah.
You know what I mean? We just jump into that mode.
In fact, I feel it's a little disconcerting to realize that can have that much effect over you.
Exactly. Yeah. But Sam, wow. Who knew that cat turds could sound so sexy? That was amazing.
Preston and Steve on 93.3 WMMR.
Now, Bizarre. WMMR presents Bizarre. Preston and Steve's Bizarre File.
The Beat File is sponsored by Elmwood Park Zoo, where curiosity roams. Witness a jaguar on the prowl, watch an otter at play, and hand-feed a giant giraffe all in the same visit. Visit elmwoodparkzoo.org to learn more.
Sometimes you get weeks that are a little bit light in the Bizarre File story news, and then other times you get ones that are heavy. Last week was a light week. I had to struggle to find any good stories.
Not so this week, huh?
I have a bounty. I have pretty much the entire week ready to go today. So,
well, we had a lot of Bizarre File fans out at the blood drive. So listen up.
Let's dive into this. A 23-foot python has swallowed a woman.
Yes.
In central Indonesia.
Whoa. How's she doing?
She's dead.
Oh,
no.
Oh, wow. I should not have been saying yes then leading up to that.
The victim, 54-year-old Wa Tiba, went missing while checking her vegetable garden near her village on Thursday evening.
On Friday, her family went to look for her at the garden, but found only her belongings, including sandals and a flashlight.
Oh, could you imagine? What a horrifying way to go.
The family and villagers launched a search for the woman and found the snake with a bloated belly about 50 yards from where her belongings were found. The villagers killed the snake, and they carried it to the village, and when they cut open the snake's body, they found Teba's body still intact with all her clothes.
It was dark in there.
She was swallowed first from her head.
Oh!
My God.
So I'm assuming...
You know, maybe that's better, though. If your head gets... If it gets crushed, I know this sounds disgusting, but you're not... Imagine going from the feet up and knowing you're being eaten alive.
No, no, no. I'm sure that it strangled her to death first. And then...
Don't they strangle and while they're eating at the same... I don't know.
Maybe they do, but
I got to watch some more documentaries.
They're constrictors, so I would imagine it probably killed her first and then swallowed her. But videos posted on some websites showed villagers slicing open the python's carcass to reveal... the woman's body. I didn't watch the videos.
We're watching it right now.
Yeah.
Obviously, everyone in the village turned out to watch as well.
Ferris said that the victim's garden, Ferris is the village chief, said that the victim's garden about a half mile from her house is in a rocky area where with caves and cliffs believed to contain many snakes. Reticulated pythons, which are widespread in Indonesia and other parts of South Asia, grab onto their prey with dozens of sharp, curved teeth. They squeeze it to death, and then they swallow it whole. Reports of human beings killed by pythons are extremely rare. In the wild, they are known to eat monkeys, pigs, and other mammals. But it is the second python attack on a human in Indonesia since March of last year, when a 25-year-old man was swallowed whole by a python in West Sulawesi province.
I'm sorry, did you say monkeys?
Yeah, they did say monkeys. So be careful.
Well, they just blurred out the body now as they they did the final incision on this thing. We're watching footage of them cut open the snake.
Yeah.
Maybe that's better that we didn't see that.
The parents of a 5-year-old boy have been hit with a $132,000 bill after their son knocked over a sculpture. Video footage of the incident last month shows a child appearing to reach out to the sculpture at the Tomahawk Ridge Community Center in Overland Park, Kansas. The boy, who was attending a wedding reception at the community center, appeared to attempt to prop up the art to stop it from falling before it wobbled and hit the floor. Days later, the insurance company representing the city sent the family a $132,000 claim. They said the piece, entitled Aphrodite D, Kansas City, was damaged beyond repair. The insurance letter stated, "You're responsible for the supervision of a minor child. Your failure to monitor could be considered negligent." Sarah Goodman, the child's mother, told ABC News that she was offended that she was called negligent and said the exhibition was treated like a crime scene after her son knocked over the sculpture. Artist Bill Lyons, who created the piece, told ABC News it was 2 years in the making and was on sale for $132,000. He said it was beyond his capabilities and desires to mend it.
But we're looking at the... I mean, yes, the kid should not have been running around, but maybe they could have secured it a little better on this podium.
The boy's parents argue the sculpture should have been better protected if it carried such a high price tag. They said it's in the main walkway. It's not a separate room. No plexiglass, not protected, not held down. There wasn't even a sign or a border around it or anything that says do not touch. Goodman says the incident has her son having bad dreams every night. The city did not respond to a request for comment. The family are now trying to work out how to foot the bill and may need to dip into their homeowner's insurance in order to do it. So, yeah, it's pretty messed up. Two people said they wanted a clinic nurse practitioner to see what pain felt like. According to police, they locked the practitioner in an office.
And with a python?
Threatened her with a hatchet and a meat tenderizer.
Oh, Jesus.
Police also found a loaded revolver in their bag. Jillian and Joseph Buza could face nearly 3 decades in prison if combined. During an appointment with her nurse practitioner, 39-year-old Jillian Buza looked over to her ex-husband and said, "Are you ready?" And that's when 70-year-old Joseph Buza cornered the practitioner with his wheelchair and held a hatchet and meat tenderizer to her face while Jillian duct taped the door shut. The pair the police believe the pair went to the Marshfield Clinic Tuesday with the intention of crushing Jillian's nurse practitioner's feet and hands. Joseph told police that she was making their lives a living hell. The pair was upset with the practitioner for trying to wean Jillian off of opioids.
How dare she?
Three employees forced the door open and helped the practitioner restrain the Buzas to take away their weapons until police arrived. But before police got there, Jillian told Joseph, "I told you we should have just killed ourselves." The pair is being charged with 2 felonies for false imprisonment and attempted aggravated battery.
They got some issues.
A Fontana man has been arrested after police said that he fatally shot his friend over an argument about who would get to sit in the front seat of the car.
Well,
police officers
literally fighting who'd be able to ride shotgun, right?
Yep. Police officers were called 10 p.m. Sunday. Officers found the victim identified as 19-year-old Jalen Wilson on the street, suffering from a gunshot wound to the chest. Wilson was transported to an area hospital where he died. Investigators identified the suspect as Sergio Orozco. Police took him into custody. Authorities learned that Orozco and Wilson were close friends. The two were with a third friend leaving a nearby party. When the driver got into his seat, Orozco and Wilson got into an argument who would sit in the front passenger seat. And that's when Orozco pulled out a handgun and shot Wilson in the chest.
At least the death was not in vain.
Wow. All right. And then we'll do one last story. This one's too long. How about this one? I like this one a lot. A rabid bobcat recently attacked a grandmother in her yard, spurring a furious battle that ended with the cat's strangulation death.
She strangled the bobcat to death.
She, with her bare hand, she had to do it.
I'm going to check on my rutabagas and... Oh, not again! Not again, you son of a bitch! Die!
Dee Dee Phillips said, I thought, not today. There's no way I was going to die, she recalled the attack.
Yippee-ki-yay, mother effer.
Phillips has been around, has begun a round of rabies shots. She also has a broken finger and numerous bite and claw wounds to her hands, arms, chest, and legs. She said, I'm very lucky. The unprovoked attack occurred about 6 p.m. She had been working on her truck that afternoon and posted a bumper sticker that read, Women who behave rarely make history. She planned to photograph the sticker and send it to her husband. Well, she walked out of the house with her cell phone. She said, my neighbor's dog was barking, and it drew my attention.
Then take a little picture of the truck. Yes, yes, line it right up. Ah, you son of a bitch!
She said, I saw the cat and I took a picture. The cat took two steps and then was on top of me. It came for my face.
That's what they do.
Phillips grew up in the country where her father-in-law was once a trapper of bobcats. As a result, she knew something about the animal's behavior. She said, they go for your jugular because when they can get you in the vein, you're dead in a couple of minutes. This bobcat did go for her upper body. She said, it caught me slightly on my face, but I got him before he could do much damage there. I took it straight to the ground and started inching my hands up to its throat, and I knew that was the only way that I was getting out of this, and she choked it to death.
And she jumped up on the turnbuckle, Preston, and dove down on top of it.
And that is what I have for you in the bizarre file. Just a taste of what we have this morning.
Have there actually ever been fatalities because of a bobcat attack?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that. I didn't think that they were big enough to kill a person. I mean, maybe a...
Kids.
Maybe a child. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
But they got... Listen, they have... really sharp claws.
Yeah, sure.
And if they get it, just get you in the right spot,
man.
When we kill you, man.
First moved out to Thousand Oaks, California years ago. We lived in Thousand Oaks for about 10 months, 11 months, I think it was. And when we first got out to the area, there was a kid who had been killed by a bobcat.
Wow. All right, and there you go. It's what I got in the beef hour.
The MMR mobile app. Use it to grab the MMR live stream and MMR audio on demand, including the Preston and Steve podcast. Bring up the live studio webcam, too. The MMR app is Android Auto and Apple CarPlay compatible, and it's free.
The trash business is a gold mine.
93.3 WMMR with Preston and Steve's Hollywood Trash.
The Trash is brought to you by Robbins Diamonds in tax-free Delaware with thousands of rings and self-serve cases and absolutely no sales tax versus the 8% tax in Philly. Robbins Delaware Diamonds.
Hi, Steve. What's going on so far this morning?
Well, Amber Rose says she feels fantastic after undergoing a breast reduction from an H to a double D cup. Rose says it's so liberating to go from having really huge breasts to having really huge breasts. During an interview with GQ magazine, Quincy Jones attacked America's sweetheart, Taylor Swift, saying, quote, stop writing hooks and start writing some effing songs. Jones then turned his anger on physicist Stephen Hawking, asking, quote, if he's so much smarter than me, how come I figured out how to walk? And finally, Chris Brown reportedly heartbroken over rumors that Rihanna might be pregnant by her current boyfriend. Brown has always seen Rihanna as the one that got away from him while he was beating her.
Oh, dear God.
That's your Hollywood track.
Okay. All right, so watching the news last night, and they had breaking news. It was on ABC, and I don't know, it might have been the 5 o'clock news report or something like that. So there was a story of someone drove a car into the river, and... They didn't know what was going on. They had a boat out there they were looking for. The only thing I heard that it was a Corvette that was driven in the river, and that was it. And I'm like, wow, okay.
We've had a few. There've been a couple recently.
You hear of it
accidental, you know.
Yeah. Or somebody may trying to kill themselves or something like that. It's happened from time to time.
Well, anytime you think that, you think, well, I do anyway. Kelly Drive, they were going too fast.
Exactly.
They lost control.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. But the
not
plot,
this one.
The plot thickens. Apparently, the story is a guy who's going through a very difficult and
acrimonious,
strainful divorce.
Yeah.
Took his wife's 1990 red Corvette and drove it into the Delaware River. And he was it the Delaware?
Yeah.
I believe?
Yeah.
He drove it into the Delaware River,
yes.
And somebody saw it. He drives it into the river, gets out, swims back to shore. Somebody came over, I guess, to help. And he goes, basically, don't tell anybody.
Don't call the police. He asked the witness not to call police.
Can you keep a secret?
Yeah. It was at 3:50 in the afternoon. It was still light out,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Well, you don't want to be dangerous about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, so where exactly did he go in?
Okay, hold on. I will get the details for you.
Because it's got to be a challenge just to find a place where that's possible, you know?
There are actually a couple places I could think of, yeah.
I'm not familiar with where this is, but it's in the Tacony section, and it's just off of McGee Avenue, they said.
All right.
So I'm not sure, but they
remember,
said...
Remember, there's that spot by the Schuylkill River,
exactly,
on the Jogging Curve.
Yeah.
It's near the Gladwin exit, right?
You get off the Gladwin exit,
yeah,
you make a right, you go under that little bridge, and just go right ahead, drive right
in
if you want.
There are lots of cars in the water there, from what we've heard from some police friends.
Have you ever been to Maggie's Waterfront Cafe? I don't know if that's in that same area, but...
I don't know.
But listen, here now on the surface, and trust us when we say this, we don't know the details of this relationship. The woman had a restraining order against this guy. I don't know if he was abusive or not. But on the surface, you kind of, you know, you put that fantasy scenario in your mind that this is like, you know what? Well, F you then.
It's the ultimate.
I'm taking this prized possession of yours and I'm destroying it.
Because a 1990 red Corvette is just... seems like a vanity thing. Like, you know, this is my prized vehicle.
Yeah.
I love this.
She must have loved it. And he was like, well, you can't have this anymore. Or maybe that was one of the sticking points in their divorce. Who gets the car? And if I can't have it, you can't have it either.
Yeah. I told you the story. I was at Men's Warehouse and there was a guy there. I was buying a crap load of suits and clothes, and I'm like, what's going on? And he sort of recognized me, and we struck up a conversation.
Yep.
And his then ex-girlfriend had incinerated every piece of his clothing.
Oh, all his clothes.
Everything. So he was buying everything from socks to underwear to the whole damn deal.
Oh, my goodness.
She incinerated it on the front lawn. He admitted to at least being moderately culpable for the cause of that. But there you go.
Wow.
I mean, and nothing. The rage fueled by passion and or the lack thereof can drive you to destroy a lot of stuff.
I usually think of more so women are the property destroyers.
It seems to be. Well, Kathy's.
But I may be totally off the mark on that.
The opening on the show, the clip we play of Kathy, you know, I'm going to destroy.
I will destroy everything you own.
Yeah.
Well, the tales of my family. So I have a cousin who is currently in jail for, she set her ex's house on fire, apartment, and it was in a historical building. So, so she was charged, like, not only because she burned all of his stuff.
She burned down a historical site?
It didn't burn down, but she damaged it.
Oh,
yes,
boy.
She damaged a historical site. So she is currently in prison.
Oh, how long is she in for, Kathy?
I don't know. It was a cousin by marriage. They're divorced now, but she took all of her ex-husband's stuff out of the house and burned it, and the building went up too.
You remember was it Lisa Left Eye Lopez?
Yeah,
sure. She burned
Andre Rison.
Right, all his most expensive sneakers, I believe it was, in the bathtub and burned down a multi-million-dollar estate.
Steve, my friend, my fraternity brother, lived there. He watched it burn down from his front yard.
That's wild. I mean, so all she's doing, she's attempting to burn his sneakers and incinerates the home.
But I mean, I guess not only divorces, which obviously this was the result of, but just a bad breakup.
Oh, you know, because you want to destroy. Have you ever done the girlfriend gave you something and you have a fight or a bitter breakup, a little stuffed bear and you tear its head off or something, or like I remember that one time a girl had done this decoupage thing, a little art pictures and, you know, for our time together. And she was just a banshee and like your burnt rubber girl, Preston.
Yeah.
And I just blasted that thing with a baseball bat.
Yeah.
And did I feel good? Yes, temporarily I did.
Sure.
And then we made up.
Oh.
And then, hey, whatever happened to that?
Oh, no.
Hey,
got stolen.
Hey, God. So that guy came in with a ski mask. It's just this guy, this decoupage lunatic. I said, thankfully, you saved my life. I love you so much.
Yeah, I wonder if, you know, I mean, you really got to be pissed off to do that.
What have you destroyed? Or have you ever destroyed anything?
In a
moment of rage. I mean, obviously, listen. Best to not get physical, obviously, with someone and do something horrific. Destroy a lamp if you want to, you know, but it's still dumb, but, you know, you can't attack someone. But there's just something about relationships that, you know, it's the age-old story of driving you out of your mind.
Yeah.
I think just getting rid of stuff. Like, I've never really destroyed anything, but any
photos.
Well,
like OJ, for example, he got rid of his ex-wife's head.
There you go. And her lover.
Yeah.
But no, photos, those are the that's the first to go. You know,
yeah,
anything in frames.
Do you do a big, did you used to do a big purge?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You don't want any no visual record of that person. You know, you don't want to look down and see them and then have the, you know, the 2 a.m. drunk phone call as a result. Or going
Nick,
over to her house.
Is that you? Nick just came in through my window.
But I mean, especially in a divorce, when it gets down to legal, this and that, you can have this, but you can't have that. And then that's got to, and if there's something you both really want.
And it can be the dumbest thing on the planet. I was talking to
wagon wheel table.
Exactly. Yeah. Stupid table. No, there was I was talking to a divorce lawyer, and she said that there was a husband and wife were getting a divorce, and they kept fighting over this cutting board. It was a nice marble cutting board. Was worth, I don't know, $100.
And the cutting
like
board
that.
Really is not that important.
It's not at all.
What it stands
sure.
for.
It cost them about $5,000 in extra legal fees because they could not come to terms on agreeing on who got the goddamn cutting board.
You will never cut a London broil again on such a smooth surface.
Oh, I would love to hear stories of that. The stupidest thing that you fought over possession of in a divorce.
Johnny Weir, you know the skater?
Yeah.
He was fighting over a dog, like a toy poodle.
Right.
You know, and now, okay, so you can understand there might be some attachment there. And then there was a Fabergé egg. Okay, there was a whole list of even very petty things that he was fighting over with his partner.
What would the most petty thing be if you were to get a divorce with your wife or Kathy, your husband? What do you think you could foresee you guys
getting in a fight over?
Yeah.
Over, I want it, you can't have it.
Uh-huh.
The furniture. The living room furniture.
Would he fight you on it?
No.
Yeah, we both love the... It's our furniture is the most comfortable furniture. I don't even know, like, I've never sat in anything more comfortable, and we both love it. I bet you that's what
it would
be.
Do you know what he's done? He's set you up. He's looking ahead to a potential divorce, he's made you think that he loves that furniture so much. So that when you win and the bat is, I take the goddamn furniture, so that he can then have what he really wants.
No, Casey, I'm telling you, every time we sit on it, someone will say... I'm just still amazed that this is that comfortable.
Kathy, make sure you get a prenup. This couch is awesome.
I'm trying to think of, Casey, what I would hold on to like a little kid and grip in my arms and go, no, no,
mine,
it's mine.
I think I know what.
What?
My Batman bust in the office there.
I can see you gripping that.
Batman.
Now, the kid's book that I had restored that from my childhood, there's no way.
I'd
never give that up.
Would she go after that?
No, I don't think so. But you know, if I'm trying to think of something that is dear to me that doesn't seem like much on the surface, you know, monetarily.
All right, what would you target of hers if you wanted to cause, and it's horrible to think this way, but if you wanted to exact a little bit of emotional damage?
Oh, my God.
What would you take
of hers?
My
wife's a pack rat. She saves everything. So there's a lot of things that I could grab.
Her pet egg?
Her pet egg. No, I'm the one who has
the pet egg.
For removing dead skin.
I scrape my feet.
Your feet, yeah.
Man, that would take some thought. I'm not really sure right off the bat. I can't think of anything. Like, if she wanted my golf clubs, that would be a bit of an issue.
Well, that would be a major FU, because they're yours.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
She was like, well, I want to
I think I will take the
I
game
want
up.
To learn golf, and I want to learn them on your clubs.
Hang on, let me go, dude. I'm going to go to Ken here. Hey, Ken, good morning.
Hey, when my ex and I had separated, she had moved out, took some stuff, and left a bunch of things, and then gave me a list of things she wanted.
So I took everything outside, lit it all on fire, gave it back to her in a couple of boxes.
Oh, God,
you gave
dude.
Her back wow. boxes of ashes?
I did, and I said, there's all your personal belongings.
Now, did Whoa. She attempt to exact retribution on you for that?
She attempted to, but it was more or less like it was in the house. He can do whatever he wants. It wasn't you have to prove that it was yours and stuff like that.
I wonder, with that sort of stuff, where can the law step in if you were – because you're
– That's destruction of property.
Destruction of property. Yeah. But however, does the court see that as joint property at that time unless you're fully divorced?
Right. And at the time we weren't fully divorced, we were still waiting for all of that paperwork, and she wasn't signing
all
papers.
Right. There we go.
That's your property.
It's your property, too, at that point.
Maybe unlawful Absolutely. Burning yeah. or something like that. But, yeah. All right. Thanks, Ken. Wow. I'm going to go to hey, Norman, you're on the air now. Hey, bud.
Hey, guys. You rock.
Thanks, man. What's your story?
Hey, well, you know, we went ahead. My ex, we separated. And she was still living in the townhouse. I found a place to live. And we picked out, you know, this is where you're going to get. And a record collection that I had started way prior. And I'm talking milk crates. Probably if there was hundreds or might have been 1,000 records.
Wow. Right. Okay.
And she took each one out of the cover, out of the slip, took a fork, raked it across the side of just one side of each album. Put it back into the tissue, put it back into the cover, and neatly stacked everything. Oh,
so every one of your records, Norman?
Every one.
That's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
If you were to guesstimate a dollar value to the amount of damage caused, what would you say?
Oh, my God. I don't know. There were times where I went to New York to Sam Goody's and waited for certain albums to come in, stuff that were imports, you know, so it wasn't. Wasn't just a Beatles collection. So.
Right, right.
Norman, why was she so pissed off? What took place? That led up to this split up.
Oh God, I guess there were improprieties on both sides.
On both sides.
So you're copping to having a hand in the destruction of the marriage.
Hey man, it's a two-way street.
It's a two-way street. Well, that's cool, but I mean, did you attempt to destroy anything of hers in retribution?
No.
Nothing.
You just wanted out at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
You just took your half an album sides and left.
Yeah.
Well, I got to hand it to her. It was due diligence to take each one out.
Oh, yeah. My God. Yeah.
But I mean, at that point, you know, the rabbit's on the stove next. You need to, yeah.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. All right. That's thanks, right. Norman. Let me go to Julie. Hi, Julie. Good morning.
Hi, guys. Gadzooks.
What's up, Julie?
All right. Well, I guess I was collateral damage to a marriage or relationship gone wrong that I was unaware. I was in between apartments. He was a friend of mine who rented out his room for the month for me, kind of as a favor. And I was, again, unaware of this nasty relationship, whatnot, toxic thing going on with his ex-wife.
Right, so you're renting a room to this person, unaware of this this going on, and you're just the landlord in this configuration.
Yeah. And, well, he lived in the place as well. So
okay.
It was his apartment as well.
All right.
So it was. I remember being at work and someone saying, you know, you need to go back to the apartment immediately, and I'm like, you know, I have no idea why. And what had happened was the wife and daughter found out that he had a girl staying there. That's all they knew. The daughter, I guess, was my size and took half of my clothes. They bleached the mom and the daughter all over everything that I owned,
poured
as
bleach.
Well as my cat.
They poured bleach on your cat?
They poured bleach on my cat. She was gone for 2 weeks. She still has, like, bleach marks on her.
Oh, my God.
And on her fur. And, yeah. So that was fun.
So did they break into the house?
Yeah.
Okay, so they broke in.
Or the ex-wife might have still had a key. I have no idea.
All right, so she gets in, and they're pouring bleach all around the house. Just your stuff?
Just in the room that he rented out to the random girl that they didn't know.
Oh, man. How much damage?
Literally, I think I was just listening to the story about the guy in the Men's Warehouse where he was buying everything. That was pretty much me at that point.
Wow.
Not at Men's Warehouse, but, you know.
How long ago was this, Julie?
This was about 4 years ago in Westchester.
And your cat's okay?
My cat is alive and well, yes.
Jeez.
It's kind of like animal cruelty at some point.
That is. Well, yeah. Well, there are felonies involved with what she did. Yeah.
We got started on this because someone took their wife, they're going through a divorce, took their wife's Corvette and drove it into the Delaware River yesterday.
I'm going to go get your car washed. Sweetie, I'm going to go get your car washed.
A 49-year-old man from Northeast Philadelphia, and they said when they pulled the Corvette out of the river, like, it looked beautiful.
Oh, of course.
They said it was a beautiful
Nothing
car.
Cleans a car like a flowing river.
Here's a text that says, I took a hammer to my then-husband's motorcycle after finding out that he had multiple affairs and that one of his girlfriends was pregnant with twins.
Oh, my God. Mm.
So smashed up his motorcycle.
Bill Weston has a new motorcycle this week.
Yeah. Yes, he does. You know, I mean, that's like out of that that one song. Who's the chick from American Idol?
Carrie Underwood.
Underwood. Yeah, with the smashing up the dude's truck and everything like that. In fact, let me go to Ashley. Hi, Ashley. Good morning.
Basically, my dad, my mom was being very difficult through a divorce, kind of dragging on, being you-know-what about it. And she decided she wanted half of the assets. And he was trying to give her everything, but she was being difficult. So she insisted she wanted half the assets. She wanted, you know, the blazer. Well, he had already tried to give her the whole blazer, but she's still being difficult.
Well, let me ask you, Ashley. If you're going to, he's offering to give her the whole blazer. How do you force someone to give you half of something? You share custody of the vehicle?
It was his vehicle, but he kind of just wanted her to go away.
Okay.
So he offered her the whole thing. She decides she's going to flip around, play the lawyer game. She wants half the money of the blazer. So he calls me in the morning and says, just so you know, I'm going to cut the blazer in half.
I'm going to cut the blazer in half.
So it sounded like she wanted the cash for everything. Yeah. He would say, here, take the car. She said, no, I want the cash
for
it.
I want half the money for it. Okay. So, but he satisfied the requirement.
Instead, he went to Home Depot, bought a bunch of Sawzall blades, put the blazer on our forklift, and proceeded to cut it directly down the middle.
Seriously?
I have pictures I can send you.
Oh,
we got to see those.
So, Ashley, he delivers half the car to her, half the blazer to her?
We had an arrangement that they owned a business together. She would work the night shift and do the admin, and he worked the day. Well, I get a phone call around 5:30, panicked, like, can you hurry up and come pick me up? Well, why? He's like, I just realized I cut my car in half. I don't have to ride home. Your mom's going to be here any minute. And we left her half in the back.
Did she get the cab or the bed?
She got the cab because she liked her stuff, so we figured she would like to store the things.
No, that was very courteous to do that. They're very respectful.
How did she react, Ashley?
He was less than thrilled.
Obviously.
You've heard stories about that where they'll split their assets where a dude will saw a house in half.
Yeah. Ashley, send us pictures.
Yeah, I want to see that.
Hang on. All right, Bob says that similar story, Steve, of cutting a house in half. Hey, Bob, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, what's happening, buddy?
Yes. He passed away, but he was a friend of mine. He was a motorcycle enthusiast, but in the 60s, he had gotten married, and he owned everything. He bought his own house, was paid for and everything, so he gets married, he gets in a divorce. So then she goes to court, judge awards everything, half and half. So he goes down to the hardware store and bought a chainsaw and gave her half of everything, half the bed, half the couch. He said when he went to cut the TV in half, it like exploded, like they imploded. He thought it was going to kill him.
So Bob, what did he, like, take a flatbed and deliver it all that way, or did he just leave it?
Just left everything in the house cut in half. I mean, he cut everything up. So then he went up and he, like, literally cut the house in half with a chainsaw. And it was in the Bucks County Courier, I think, up there for quite a while. I mean, he made the paper.
Okay.
I mean, we got to look that up.
If he's the legendary story that I've heard of the guy who cut the house in half, and if that's legit, then that's wild.
How did that end, Bob?
Well, you know, they got the divorce, and I guess they cleaned up the mess, whatever. I don't know. But,
So let me ask you, the divorce came through after that? So, in other words, they were still taking...
No, the judge awarded her. The divorce was final.
Okay.
You know, now usually, you know, you sell the house, take this, you take that, but he awarded her half of everything. But he told the judge, he says, it's mine. I bought it, I paid for it before I was married.
And the judge says, doesn't matter. She gets half. So he says, I'll give her half.
Well, yeah, I understand that part. So and I'm just wondering, so at the point where he cut everything in half, the divorce had been finalized?
Yep.
Okay, so,
so what happens?
That's a criminal act then, isn't it?
Hey, I don't know what happened.
I mean, he destroyed property that the court had decreed she had right to.
Yeah, sometimes you just want to let it go, though. You know,
yeah.
I mean, not to quote Frozen again, but like you just want to move on. You know, if you're finished with your divorce, even if somebody cuts something in half, you're just like, whatever. I just want to be finished with this
all
person.
Right, maybe.
You know?
Yeah. I don't
know. She got half of it.
No, we got it. Yeah.
All right, thanks, man.
Is that about a divorce, Frozen?
No. It's just she's being cheated on by her boyfriend. So it's all about destroying his vehicle.
Have you ever had anything of yours destroyed by a girlfriend?
No, not that I know of. I never got that bad.
I always tried to avoid situations. The one piece of decoupage was the thing I destroyed.
I just stopped communicating.
Yeah.
I'm one of those.
You just shut yourself off from me.
You do the fadeaway.
I used to do the total fadeaway.
Yeah. Sam Kinison.
It'll go away.
A great bit about it. Yeah.
Ignore the problem.
It'll go away. And then they go. They just leave.
Well, I'm very interested to find out the details of this.
They
have not found the guy yet, but they know who he is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It should be no problem. But
he probably didn't think it all the way through.
No.
He called the wife, apparently, and told her that, you know.
That he was going to do it?
Well, that he was going to destroy her car. And then after he drove it into the river, he called her and said that he did destroy her car. So that's sort of how the authorities know that it's him.
Parked your car in the river if you're looking for it?
This may have a dark edge to it. This guy may have been terrible. I don't really know. But before we find that out, let's
revel in the moment.
Let's just talk about the funny side of this and going to great lengths and how love can make you do crazy things from time to time. All right. So anyhow, we'll let you know as soon as we find out any information about it.
Preston and Steve
on 93.3 WMMR.